It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Oh, you're going to like this panel. Brand new on TWiT, Abrar Al-Hidi from CNET. She'll join our old favorites, Georgia Dow and Christina Warren. What is Amazon up to with its $1.7 billion acquisition of the Roomba makers? The Senate passes the big infrastructure bill. What does this mean for electric vehicles? And why your Epson printer has just stopped printing? It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 887, recorded Sunday, August 7th, 2022. Chorizo in Space. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastics by reinventing home essentials that are good for you and the planet. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order when you go to blueland.com/twit. And by Podium. Join more than 100,000 businesses that already use Podium to streamline their customer interactions. See how Podium can grow your business. Watch a demo today at podium.com/twit. And by userway.org. Userway is the world's number one accessibility solution committed to enabling the fundamental human right of digital accessibility for everyone. When you're ready to make your site compliant, deciding which solution to use, it's an easy choice to make. Go to userway.org/twit for 30% off Userway's AI-powered accessibility solution. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news with a panel of fabulously brilliant people. And I'm happy to say we did it again. I don't know how it happens, but magically, our producer Jason Howell has put together a wonderful panel, starting with Georgia Dow from YouTube.com/Georgia Dow and Westmount Therapy. Hello, Georgia.
Hello.
You are preparing your final segment on The Boys, A Therapist Reacts, I think.
On The Boys. Yep. I am doing Au Noir.
Nice. And you've got a bird in your hair. What is that? A bird?
I have a bird in my hair. Okay. It's a bird.
Okay.
It's a bird. Some will know, some will not know.
I do not know. I've only seen season one. I got to catch up.
You've got to catch up on it.
Should you watch the show before you watch Therapist Reacts?
You should, because there'll be spoilers if you don't already know. Some people do because they're just there. Like, I watch a show and then I go through the psychology of the show. So when we do, Black Noir. I think I said Au Noir because there's a restaurant that I love in Montreal.
Close.
It's close. It's similar, not the same. But so you should. Some people watch it for the psychology aspects, because that's what I deal with. I just go through what is the psychology, and I usually choose a certain aspect of psychology to be able to deal with through a character on a show. So it's a funner way to be educated on.
Do you find? I mean, I would guess this is probably true for people who write TV shows, that they have to understand, at least intuitively, have to understand psychology. Do you find that the psychology is, there's Black Noir, by the way, that the psychology is pretty accurate?
For a lot of shows, it's exceptionally accurate.
Yeah.
Like, I think that they do a really good job. I think that a lot of shows hire people like me to make sure that the psychology kind of matches up.
Yeah.
And there are some shows that the psychology, like, it's spot on. Like, they're kind of hitting all the marks, and I can really go through different sets of, like, the actors are doing a really great job at portraying the feelings. And there's even some animations that they've just done, such like Arcane. Like, they've done just such an amazing job at making sure that all of the emotions come through and they understand why their character is doing what they were doing and for what reasons for it. And
there's probably
some that kind of miss.
If you're watching a show and somebody does something that's psychologically wrong, you know, somehow doesn't match up, you may not know why, but you may go, that doesn't feel right. Like, that's not how somebody would really behave in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
and
that.
For me, it really bothers me, right?
Yeah,
like, if someone has
yeah.
some sort of an issue with something and then they forget it in between, and I'm like, they wouldn't
that.
Be touching that. They're germophobic. They wouldn't be touching
mm-hmm,
this. It doesn't fit with all of the mythos of their character.
Mm-hmm.
And it psychologically kind of pulls us out, right? It causes that disjoint in our mind to be able to be like, that doesn't really fit.
Yeah.
And that cognitive dissonance kind of stops us from being fully immersed.
Makes sense. But this is an embarrassment of riches today, because not only do we have Georgia Dow, we also have Christina Warren, now senior developer advocate at GitHub. and owner of many fine kicks. Hello, hello, Christina.
Hey, Leo.
Your shoe rack looks very shiny.
It is shiny. As people have already noted in the chat, some of the shoes are missing. but look, like at least we're like in the process of getting things sorted.
There's a pump on the third row.
There is, and it's probably someplace else. And I don't even
no
know,
no.
Like,
I
shoe,
prefer
but, yeah.
to think there's a story to tell.
Probably
like Cinderella.
Probably.
You only have one shoe. It was a great party.
Right. It's really good. I had a really good time, and I came home without a shoe, which actually I think has happened to me before, where I've come home with a missing shoe. At least this is better. I'm working on my office. At some point in the future, I'll have like a really nice looking setup like Georgia does, but not quite there yet.
With pictures.
Did you see
of
that? I had to pause. No, I had to pause to be able to clear out. It's not, like I bought like these giant wings. Anyways, they're. I have to clear out some stuff, so it wasn't that great. Usually, they only see this much.
Right?
It's hard. It's very hard
over here.
And I hope that poor Abrar Al-Hidi is not now thinking, "Oh my God, they're going to be analyzing my background." Video.
I will, but
yeah, they're thinking about those blinds. I can tell you right now, Abrar Al-Hidi.
That one's annoying.
Video producer at CNET.
She yeah, covers. We want to just touch that one. We want to just pop that one back.
It's like sticking out. It's kind of bothering me now.
Oh, my God.
Now that's what everyone's going to notice. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said
so
anything.
So sorry. Yeah. Don't listen to anything we say. Just
I warned you, Abrar. We have a fairly OCD audience. They already noticed missing shoes from Christina's rack. Yeah, I think they're going to be bothered by that blind for the rest of the show.
Yeah, my apologies.
Abrar works for CNET, Internet Trends, Entertainment, Pop Culture, Digital Accessibility. And as Christina noted, she hails from the home of Mozilla, Urbana-Champaign, Illinois.
That's right.
Yes. Great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Amazon. All right. This is a really interesting story. And I think there are a lot of ramifications. On the surface of it, Amazon's going to buy Roomba. iRobot, they make the Roomba vacuum, robot vacuum. $1.7 billion, seems like a good business. But there was a very good article, I thought, in Wired that maybe it's conspiracy theory. I'd like to know what y'all think. iRobot deal would give Amazon maps inside millions of homes. It ain't the dust, writes Kerry Johnson. It's the data. Christina, is there more to this acquisition?
I mean, I definitely think the data is part of it, right? Like, I don't know if that was the impetus between why they were buying iRobot. I have to think that they were also, I mean, because Amazon had been kind of in this space, too, and to try to sell competitors.
Yeah, did they have a robot vacuum? It feels
they
like
did.
They might have,
yeah.
Yeah,
they definitely did, and definitely. I mean, with their big IoT push and with the
sidewalk
Ring
and the Ring
exactly.
doorbell.
In Ring
fact,
and,
that's
and
what Kari says. They bought the Eero in 2019, Ring in 2018. Of course, they've got in most homes they've got an Amazon Echo or two with microphones
right.
and cameras. But what? So it does look like maybe it's a coinkydink. Kind of looks like they're putting together some sort of portfolio of data about me.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly I could see areas where it could be interesting if you had even just some ancillary data about, you know, the layouts of people's houses and whatnot. Like if you're in the business of maybe wanting to sell furniture, I don't know, or selling electronics or selling other things and wanting to, you know, Amazon wants to be like the store for everything. I don't think that there's an argument that you can make that having this data wouldn't be potentially useful. I don't know, though, if that's the only reason why they're buying this company, if that makes sense.
Abrar, it makes me, though, think that Amazon is not the innocent internet storefront that we've thought it was.
Yeah, I think it's so fascinating to see how it's gone from a place where you can kind of conveniently buy things at a lower price to, oh my God, they know everything about what I'm buying, what I'm watching, what I'm reading, what I'm listening to. And they're in so many different facets of our lives now. And I think we kind of like woke up one day and we're like, oh my God, like, I think most people didn't really realize how quickly it all kind of ramped up. And now it kind of feels like it's spiraling out of control. And to think, oh my God, they would know the layout of my home just feels incredibly intrusive.
Remember that Roomba got in, or iRobot got in a little trouble when people realized that those maps that the Roomba has to make out of necessity of, you know, where the dog dish is, where the sofa is, you know, where your kitchen is, so that it can navigate those spaces, were getting uploaded to iRobot. And that's when people went, wait a minute, why? I don't know if iRobot ever sufficiently explained it. They certainly didn't stop doing it. But then I guess the question is, well, what? I mean, so what if Amazon has a map of my house? I mean, what are they going to do with it?
Do this so because it becomes one more piece of information that a company has that did not disclose it beforehand. Like, I think right. that Facebook has taken a whole brunt of like damage control on like misusing all of our information. Amazon's kind of like been really quiet about it, just taking the information and not really said anything. Because when you put that, like, put all of that information together, they really know. I won't say almost everything about us, but like almost everything about us.
And yeah.
So that's
what
the
don't they know?
The house.
They just they bought one medical for $3.49 billion.
That one bothers me more.
They get all those health records. Yes. I'm sure they're protected somehow by HIPAA, but still, it looks more like it does not look like Amazon is building a portfolio of products it can sell. And in fact, you know, so when Amazon first started, that was kind of the idea was, in fact, I think they said like the world's largest bookstore or something like that. Mm-hmm. The idea was, hey, we're going to be the best retail ever. But then, and we've got more mature in our thinking about it. And I think Brad Stone's books about Amazon got me thinking about. And at one point, I think Stone says, well, what Amazon really wants to do is own a small piece of every transaction, like a couple of pennies every time you buy something online. That's a good living. Then they became an advertising company. In fact, their quarterly results show that they're very good at that. They make a lot of money in advertising. And what's their biggest business? AWS, which is network cloud stuff. You know, selling cloud access to people. I don't know how that fits in. But then all these acquisitions, it really looks like Amazon isn't necessarily a bookstore, isn't necessarily like a Visa card, a transaction collector, that they're somehow building. I don't know. It's unclear in my mind, but they're somehow building a dossier about everybody. What would they use that for? What could that be?
But there's a lot of information that isn't shown. Like, it's the rooms that we choose that we want to clean. It's the rooms that we use the most of. It's where furniture is placed to be able to sell things. It's where people usually travel to. It's economic status, because larger houses, larger spaces of where people are located. Mm. It's how much people purchase in certain sized homes.
Yeah.
And I think that my biggest issue, though, isn't even the data. It's that when you sign a privacy policy for a company that you trust and you're all comfortable, but then they get bought out, all of your information that you believed was secure because you trusted the company now is in whatever, some nefarious company or non-nefarious company's hand, and it changes everything. And we don't have a right to say, you know what, I now want to, you know, there's no sandbox around my information. It's just kind of given away. And it's like we've been sold off to the highest bidder, whoever that person might be, when we actually signed a contract with someone else. And there is no contract law that really protects us and allows us to revoke access to the data that we've already given away in a trusted situation.
Well, I don't know how much people trusted Roomba to save those maps anyway. I mean,
I don't think anyone knew that they were being mapped.
Right.
I didn't know that when I had my Roomba.
If you think about it, you realize that's how horrified. That it has to do that, right? It has to kind of
have to upload it. It has to know itself, because what they say when you read it, they say that the Roomba takes a look at the area and then goes back and forth and kind of remembers. It does not tell you. At least when I had my Roomba, it did not tell me. And I actually read privacy policies because I'm nerdy that way, that it did not tell me that it's uploading and saving that data and could sell that off to a third party.
Well, and remember, Amazon was, I think they did sell a few of them, built this robot Astro that would know where your kitchen is. So you could say, Astro, go to the kitchen. If they're not intentionally trying to build this very complete map of everything I buy, own, do, am, then by accident they're doing this, but it sure looks like it's intentional. So is that a problem?
I think it's, you know, I think the thing that a lot of people are growing increasingly uncomfortable with is that, you know, George, I love that you read the privacy policies of these companies. I think a lot of people don't necessarily do that. And I think, you know, they use these products or services and then realize, how much am I giving away with all of this? And I think we're kind of feeling inundated with the fact that any platform you use, any service you use, you're giving away so much more information than you would feel comfortable with. And you kind of feel helpless in the sense that, like, you know, there is a beauty to having a sense of privacy and not feeling like your data is being used to sell products or services to, you know, get more of your money. It just kind of feels like this endless spiral. So I think just knowing how much they know about you is incredibly uncomfortable. And, you know, companies like Amazon will only continue to grow and only continue to glean more information about each of us.
Sorry, I just sneezed. I cut my mic.
Bless you.
Yeah, I mean, I go back and forth on privacy, and on the one hand, if all Amazon's going to do is use this to put better recommendations at the bottom of the Amazon.com page, I think that's relatively harmless. But then I also start to look at stories about, for instance, the government buying information from data brokers.
Yep.
That some data brokers are selling for $150, $160. A list of all the people who went to visit an abortion clinic in the last 6 weeks, that kind of thing. And I start to realize that potentially this becomes harmful. I don't think Amazon is thinking, what could we sell the government?
Well, yes and no. I mean, like you look at like what the fact that, you know, Ring and some of this might have had carve outs before Amazon acquired them. But, you know, Ring will give your data over to the police, and which bothers me on a lot of levels. Even if you opt out, the police can still kind of get into these programs where without a search warrant, they can get access to this Ring data. What bothers me about that is if you as an individual want to offer some of your camera information, fine. But Ring is taking video footage of people who are in your surrounding area and is also collating things with people who haven't opted into that. So I have very, very big problems with that happening at all. I think that if the police want to get information, from someone's security system, regardless of whether it's cloud-based or local, I think they need to have a warrant for that, period. I don't think that you should have companies like the Ring and Amazon by extension just passing it over. I think that that is a massive violation. And so if you look at that perspective and you're saying, well, they'll do it in this instance, and we know that they also will, without warrants in some contexts, give Alexa information over to law enforcement, then I do have concerns about what other information they have collected on me and how willing they will be to provide it to people under whatever, you know, like justification they want to give it to. And I personally think that it's more troubling in some regards to say we're going to give it to law enforcement without warrants than we would be to sell it to advertisers. Although I do think that selling it to advertisers and selling it to government entities is a massive problem too. But the fact that you have a very large company like Amazon, but you could say the same thing for Google. You could say it for Microsoft.
Yeah, Google does, by the way, the same thing.
100%. You could say it for Meta. But the fact that they collect all this information about us and that it exists anywhere where it is, regardless of what they say, there's a way that they can have it tied to an individual identity and that can be tied to a person, I think that should cause us to have concerns, even if we are resigned, as I basically am, that like privacy in a lot of regards is dead. I still think that we should have concerns and should be asking questions about why does all this information need to exist and why does it all have to be tied and controlled by these very large companies that are acting as data brokers, but not always having to take the same responsibility that other, you know, data brokers might.
Well, if you think about it, if you wanted to build an Orwellian surveillance state, you would do all of this.
Right.
So in a way, what's happened is private corporations have done it for the government. And it's all it's missing is the government saying, okay, fine, great, we'll take it from here. The requests that go to Ring and Google for their camera footage are what's called emergency requests. Most of the time, you do need a warrant. But if it's something that is time sensitive, somebody's getting murdered or something, and there we could stop it if we got the footage. So that's the theory. And I think no company, I don't think it's just Google and Amazon, I think no company wants to be the company that says, oh, we could have stopped that abduction if we had just given footage to the law enforcement when they asked for it.
Well, but there's also it's if there are really life and death situations, then you can get judges and you can have warrants issued usually very quickly. So I don't buy that as an argument. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean the Constitution says there needs to be a warrant. I mean that's
I was going to say I'm sorry, but like as a I think that this is a Fourth Amendment issue fundamentally, and I'm going to come down in favor of the Fourth Amendment over what other like what if scenario you want to put for someplace. I just am. I'm going to say I think the Fourth Amendment is more important, and I also think that there are things and clauses in place within the court system to get judges to sign warrants almost immediately. I have a big problem with the fact that companies are just willing to oblige, especially since when you look into these data situations, many of these circumstances aren't necessarily these life and death scenarios. So I don't know. To me,
And also there's been hacks. So
but
you could pretend to be law enforcement and get this footage.
Exactly. And that's happened that has happened, which is a big problem. And so, yeah, I'm personally going to be more in favor of the Fourth Amendment versus whatever, you know, what if terrible scenario you have. But that's me.
No, that's actually really an excellent point. You have a constitutional protection. It says you have to have a warrant to do that kind of stuff. And let's make that possible. Let's at least go to a judge and say, hey, we need this information.
It's a problem, though, when these large companies, they have all of this lobbying and us as regular people, we really don't. We don't have the amount of protections that are in place. Companies do because companies are now people. So they get all of the handouts that they get for being a big company and the lobbying and the amount of money. But also they get all the protections as a person. And yet as people, us being all single, we really don't have much of a stake at being able to make huge changes, and we're not protected. So I fully agree with you, Christina, that we really need to make sure that protections are in place because there isn't transparency. There isn't any accountability if anything happens wrong. And it's pretty much just like, oh, well, another breach. Sorry, your information is out there. Hope nothing bad happens. And that's it. And then their hands are washed of it and then they go on. And it happens so often, we become complacent to it. We just become like, oh, that's just life now.
And should the FTC block this acquisition?
I don't think that it's that big that they should block it, but I do think that they should make sure that they should have protections in place to be able to ensure that all of our information is shown. It's written in a way that's really easy to understand because it's not. It's really filled with legalese. No one reads privacy policy unless you really have a lot of time on your hands. No one's going to read them because they're so difficult to read and they're terrifying.
Well, and also we kind of assume, I have no privacy. They're going to, regardless of what they say and regardless of what I agree to, they're going to take it. So I give up. I mean, I think most of us have just given up at this point. Abrar, you were saying that they should stop it?
Oh, sorry. No.
Although it's too small to stop.
Yeah, I don't think that they
would
stop it.
They're not going to weigh in on this.
Yeah. No, I don't.
And also, there's competition. There are other companies that do this. It's not sewing up the market, so maybe there isn't an antitrust reason. It's really about privacy. I don't know if the FTC has a mandate to do that. We know Lina Khan, their chair, does. You know, she wants to, I'm sure, but she may not be able to. So what is our recourse? We just have to sit and take it, or not buy a Roomba and not buy an Echo. By the way, let's not forget, and again, I'm not convinced that Amazon's doing this out of any nefarious intent, but they have set up, using Ring doorbells and Echo devices, a low-power, low-rod network called Sidewalk that is intended to cover the entire country, every square inch. Because if you have an Amazon device, the chances are you're already part of this network, sharing a little tiny bit of your internet so that lost keys can be found and that seems also to be a very big surveillance tool. It's too much of a coincidence, and I just wonder what they're up to.
I feel like there's also just no escape. Like there's no way to escape Amazon at this point. Like
that's right.
You know, you're gonna buy a product or use a service in some capacity, and it really does feel rather helpless. I don't know what the answer is in terms of what to do, but it's kind of daunting.
Are we sleepwalking, as Mashed Potato in our chat room says, are we sleepwalking into Minority Report?
We are so close already.
We're so close. We really are. Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm like, oh my God, every time I get eyeball scanned, I'm like, oh no.
Well, yeah, there's this story about the UK they want to, if you're a, and by the way, this is really sad. It's not just regular offenders. If you're a foreign offender in the UK, you know, one of them immigrant types, they're going to require migrants convicted of crimes to put on a watch that takes a picture of them five times a day and does face recognition, make sure it's them, and then sends a GPS so they can, in case they're up to no good. Those obliged to wear the devices will need to complete periodic monitoring checks throughout the day by taking a photograph of themselves on the smartwatch with information including their names, date of birth, nationality, photographs stored for up to 6 years. Locations will be tracked 24/7, allowing trail monitoring data to be recorded. The UK is way ahead of us in this regard.
Can you imagine how exhausting that would be, though, as the person, like, just like mentally and emotionally exhausting? I don't understand what the reasoning is for someone taking a picture five times a day of themselves. But I just feel like, yeah, this can't be healthy at all.
In some cases, these are asylum seekers coming to the UK because of political violence in their native land. And, well, we don't want to incarcerate you. So here, wear this watch, check in five times a day, and we're going to track you. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's going to cost £6 million. It'll start in the autumn across the UK. When I saw that, I thought, this is Orwell. This is 1984. This is, holy moly.
I was trying to think, like, do we think something like this would ever happen in the, like, if something like this came up in the U.S., like, what would the backlash be like, you know, or would it be enough? I don't know.
I hope it couldn't happen, right?
Yeah.
No, I would, but hope you so see, too. It can, because we end up doing this thing of, like, us and them. They'll do it to a them. We try to
That's
separate
right.
people.
Do it to
and
migrants.
They start
That's
it true. With That's right. a other. And because yeah. it's an other and it's not us, people say okay. And so you give up a little bit of your rights for your safety, which is the fastest way to make someone give up their rights. And then after we're comfortable with it happening to them, it happens to just bad people, right? Like it's just them. And then it just happens to people that have like since offended, whatever, done something that's wrong. And then slowly it becomes just mainstay. And so it's not something that's going to happen right away. And it becomes like, oh, but child predators, like they put it onto something that's really hard to be able to say, no, we shouldn't go with this, because then you become a horrible person that's on the side of predators or, you know, abusers. And then it's just this insidious sliding over of our rights. And unfortunately, I would love to say that I'm just wearing like a aluminum hat right now and this isn't something that happens, but this is exactly the psychology of what happens when governments want to grab more power. They find something to make us afraid. And because we're afraid, we give up our rights faster than anything else, because it works on that limbic primal part of our brain that safety is more important and we're at danger. Though we've never been safer. The amount of crime in the world, in again, first, you know, world countries, has gone starkly down from the 70s. Yet we are starkly more afraid than we've ever been.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And I think everything you said is dead on. The other thing I would say, though, is that what I think what happened in the U.S., in addition to kind of this, like, you know, like a small slide of starting with one group and then slowly expanding to others, and then it becomes mainstay, is that we will just corporatize it, which we've already done. Right. Where it'll be part of a private company doing these things, and then it becomes kind of the norm, and then it becomes part of government programs. Like I'm part of Clear, which is like a way where you can get through, you know, like the airport faster.
Yeah, they do iris scans.
Yeah, they do iris scanning. I also have like TSA PreCheck and Global Entry and all that stuff. But Clear partners with Delta, who's the airline that I primarily fly with, where if you are wanting to, you know, go to certain countries, they will have like iris scanning in lieu of checking, you know, your passport before you board the flight. And this is just becoming a commonplace thing. And these are becoming adopted, like these private technologies are becoming embedded into systems that governments interface with. And so I can see this sort of thing happening where, okay, it just starts with one sort of thing that is operating as a private entity. And then once there's acceptance there, then those private entities now suddenly have partnerships with the government. And suddenly that's another way of expanding things too, in a way that is much more palatable to people in the United States, where we're all about, you know, kind of like freedom, and we have like a very different kind of worldview, you know, shaped by our founders about how we feel about people encroaching on civil liberties. But one of the exceptions has always been, okay, but if a private company is doing it, then that's a little bit different because I've chosen to opt into this. And I think that that's one way you kind of get around that is you start with the private companies who all of a sudden are partnering with the government entities. And then the line between the two is
sure.
non-existent.
If Walt Disney said you could jump the line. If you wear this watch that checks it, you check in at 5 times
a day. And they do. And they do.
Yeah, we would all do it. Yes.
Go, yeah, it's called the magic pass. It's called the magic wand thing. That's literally what it is.
It tracks everywhere you go, everything. Even if you're not at Disney.
Yes.
It all starts with Disney, doesn't it?
Copyright. Let's do it.
Let's just do it. Hey, but get ready because the Mickey Mouse copyright, there's no Sonny Bono to extend copyright law. Mickey Mouse is going out of copyright soon. That's going to be Armageddon.
Oh, they'll throw a gazillion dollars. They'll suddenly.
You think they'll get it? That, they'll find somebody to.
Yes, they'll. What are you kidding? like how quickly do people fold? I'm sorry. Like, you know, you throw $1 billion, I'll be like, yeah, you know what? I'm throwing my vote in. Like, it's just.
So for people who don't know,
numbers.
Mickey Mouse, which was created in 1928 by stealing from other people. we won't mention that part. Has never gone out of copyright because every time the copyright term is about to expire, Disney goes to Congress, for Sonny Bono was for a long time, and they would just extend the copyright law. But they've apparently got nobody to do it, so Mickey's going to be public domain in 2024, but you think they'll find somebody.
Oops.
October 1st, 2024. We'll be back here. Watch. We'll see. We'll have a party. We'll do something.
Disney party?
We'll all dress like Mickey Mouse.
We'll watch Twit get canceled.
You don't really need copyright to knock us off the air. You could probably find other ways.
They go after daycares.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
Like, I know they have to protect their copyright, and if they show that they're not protecting it. But, like, daycares, I'm like, oh, like, really?
Apparently, Disney says the original rat-like iteration of Mickey will go public domain, but we retain copyright on subsequent variations. So, the Mickey that you see today is probably going to continue to be protected. But we can all have rat-like Mickey Mouse costumes.
Yeah, it's probably going to be similar to like how the Winnie the Pooh situation is now, because Winnie the Pooh is now in public domain. But obviously, the modern design, you know, from like the 50s or 60s onward, that most people associate with Winnie the Pooh, that is still under copyright. But people can draw variations of the A.A. Milne character and can also put it into horrific situations. Like, there's a horror film that's coming out in October with Winnie the Pooh. It's awful.
Don't do that to Winnie the Pooh.
Thank you. I'm a huge like fan of like, you know, fixing the copyright system, and then something like this happens, and I go, this is why we can't have nice things, because this goes into public domain, and instantly you want to do some horrorcore like Winnie the Pooh stuff, which is just not.
I did laugh. Our sponsor, Mint Mobile, Ryan Reynolds owns it. You just see the ad where he reads a children's book called Winnie the Screwed about a bear with a phone bill that was through the roof. Okay.
See, that's funny.
That was funny. Maybe not, you know, appropriate, but you can't help but laugh. Wow, that's we'll have to watch. Disney, remember, is not as favored as it used to be, right? They used to get all sorts of in Florida. Remember, they made that social media bill, but it didn't apply to anybody who owns amusement parks.
Right.
Josh Hawley is now going after Disney because they're too woke. So maybe Disney doesn't have the votes. I don't know. We'll watch this with interest. Let's take a little break. We're going to come back with more great panel today. I am thrilled to get you, Abrar Al-Hidi. You've been great on Tech News Weekly. And they said, Jason and Micah said, why don't you have Abrar on the show? I said, yes, let's do it. From CNET, video host and producer. Her blind is still a little bit bent, but that's okay. We're not going to hold that against you.
We're not.
No,
just ignore it.
Yeah.
Nothing here.
I can't stop. Also with us, she of the left shoe only, Christina Warren, senior developer advocate. I'm just teasing. You know I am. At GitHub.
I know.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with Georgia Dow. She is perfectly symmetrical. Thank you. Thank you, Georgia. All three of you, great to have you here. Lots more to talk about. Our show, though, today brought to you by Blue Land. We really are happy. Lisa is on a crusade against single-use plastics because she likes turtles and whales, and she doesn't like seeing all this plastic in the ocean. She's seeing plastics now in our bloodstreams. So we've gotten rid of plastic in almost every aspect of our life. This is the latest, and I love it. It's called Blue Land. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles end up in landfill every year? And, of course, they never degrade. They'll be there for a million years. Most cleaning formulas, they're mostly water, so you're transporting 90% water in trucks across the country. There is a better way. Plus, those products are often filled with nasty ingredients, chlorine, ammonia. Look, it's a lose-lose all around, but Blue Land solves the problem. Eco-friendly products with bottles designed to be reused again and again. We replaced our cleaning bottles. We replaced our hand soap, you know, the soap dispensers. We replaced our laundry soap, our dish soap, all with Blue Land. You start with a beautiful Blue Land bottle, Instagrammable bottle that you use. It's a forever bottle. All you have to do is you fill it with your own water, so you don't have to transport that water. And then Blue Land sends you little tablets, little fizzies. You put in the warm water, they dissolve. And now this is the multi-surface cleaning stuff. You've got a great multi-surface cleaner. I have it in all the bathroom sinks in the house. Here at the office, we have Blue Land. And when it runs out, you just put warm water in there, put one of the tablets. You can even subscribe to these so they come. These are easy to ship. They come in paper pouches, so you can recycle those. This is eco-friendly done right. And the only thing you're going to lose is your outdated notion that eco-friendly products are too expensive or less effective. Blue Land is on a mission I'm 100% behind, to eliminate single-use plastics by reinventing home essentials that are good for you and the planet. Their innovative tablet refill solution takes up to 10 times less space than a traditional bottle. Their powerful formulas keep your home clean and smell amazing. Refills start at $2, and you don't buy a new bottle. You can buy a new bottle when you want to, but you don't. You're going to refill it. They last for a long, long time. From cleaning sprays to hand soap to the toilet cleaner. I love it. Oh, I love it. In fact, they sell out of that, so while they're in stock, get it. You just drop it in the toilet. It's amazing. Laundry tablets. They even sell, and we use these, I don't know, wool balls you put in your dryer. We put three in there. Things dry faster. You don't have to use dryer sheets anymore. It's anti-static. It's kind of magical. I did this when my daughter moved. I gave it to her as a housewarming, the Clean Essentials Kit. Everything you need to get started. And the scents are fantastic. You can get holiday scents. I mentioned before I got the Christmas scents. I still have some gingerbread soap in my bathroom, so I smell like gingerbread house when I come out. Iris agave, fresh lemon, eucalyptus mint. For a limited time, they've got some hand soap scents for summer that you're going to love. Strawberry rhubarb, citrus patchouli, and coconut palm. But you don't have to, but if you want, you can order these. It's kind of like, oh, I got new soap. Oh, it smells great. Right now, 15% off your first order. Go to Blueland, BLUELAND.com/twit. Blueland.com/twit. 15% off your first order of any Blue Land products. Blueland.com/twit, BLUELAND, blueland.com/twit. Thank you, Blue Land. And, of course, we thank you, dear Twit listener, for going to that special address. That way we get credit for it. Blueland.com/twit. We've been using these for a year now. I just love our Blue Land stuff. Blueland.com/twit. And they keep track of when you're going to run out. They send you a little text message. You want some more? And I said, yes, it's great. Blueland.com/twit. Tesla might be in trouble. The Department of Motor Vehicles in our fine state of California is accusing Tesla of falsely advertising autopilot. It's about time. It is not an autopilot. It's driver assist. Tesla loves you to think that, you know, it's a self-driving vehicle. But DMV says that's false advertising. You misled consumers. claiming in advertisements that vehicles equipped with autopilot and full self-driving were autonomous. They have complained to the state's Office of Administrative Hearings. And the potential risk for Tesla is the license to make and sell vehicles in California. They do both. Could be suspended or revoked. Wow. No response from Elon. I'm surprised he hasn't tweeted about this. He tweets about everything else. What do you think? Is this fair?
I think it's important to raise this concern just because, you know, there have been accidents and there have been deaths. And I think, you know, I think sometimes people might, that term autopilot can be incredibly misleading or saying that something is fully self-driving when it's not. I mean, I have friends who have Teslas and maybe get a little too comfortable when they do turn on autopilot.
Yes, that's the problem.
And so, yeah. So, you know, they'll be like completely on their phones the whole time or like working. It's just absolutely reckless. But I think it is fair to bring this up as a concern. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out and if Elon weighs in. I'd be surprised if he didn't at some point.
National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, has been investigating all this. In fact, there were two crashes last month in which Teslas collided with motorcycles on freeways in the dark. Both were fatal, I'm sorry to say. And the concern is that maybe the Teslas didn't even see them. You know, that they couldn't. One was in Riverside, California. There's another in Draper, Utah. Middle of the night. And, of course, one of the things Tesla does, which I think is a little slimy, is, and the NHTSA wants this information, they will turn off autopilot right before the crash. Mm. And then they can say, oh, autopilot wasn't involved. It was off when the accident happened. That's one of the things NHTSA has been saying. Yikes! I had a Tesla. Loved my Tesla. I don't have a Tesla now. But even when I had a Tesla with autopilot, I was vigilant. And there were times when the thing would start to veer off to into the shoulder or even into a barrier. There were times when I had lane. Merging where you'd signal and it would go into the next lane automatically. It would do it. And it was really close to a car behind me. And I was like, stop. Mm-hmm. You just don't want to fully trust it. So advertising that it is full self-driving is, maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah. And it's words matter. People will hear, autopilot and think that they can do their crossword puzzle while they're driving, go to sleep, take a nap, turn around. Unfortunately, you want to think that we're like a higher formed organism and we think all these things, but you see TikTok videos, people getting out of their car and dancing while the car is driving and they're actually doing it. It's not that someone's actually taken over driving, which is what happens in most of the videos, but or they're on the roof of the car. No, you probably should be driving. It's hundreds of pounds of steel probably, or, aluminum and, it's just a dangerous thing to be able to do. But when you say autopilot, people will believe that because we're not as evolved as we think we are. And then we'll do things that we shouldn't do, thinking that the car will take over. And even if it does a lot of the time, that means that there's a whole bunch of times when it won't. So,
but on the other hand, we are humans are terrible drivers. I mean, sure, Tesla's ran into two motorcycles in the last month. How many motorcyclists have been killed by humans driving, 100%? We're terrible drivers. So
we're terrible at lots of things.
That's one of the questions okay, admittedly, Tesla self-driving is not perfect, but is it better than a human? It's unknown. And that's what we got to investigate.
Both, though, right? Long as if they said it was an assist instead of it was self-driving.
That's true.
If it's self-driving, we think that the car is self-driving, hence the word self and driving. But if it said just driver assist, then it was like it's there to help you. It's like cruise control, right? If they said something that was more similar to that, we're like, okay, we still have to pay attention. It's going to be keeping the same, a certain distance, but we have to pay attention because it doesn't deal with every single situation.
Tesla has till Friday to respond, but one of their responses could be, well, it's just marketing, guys. Come on.
That is probably what they will say.
Yeah.
That is probably what they'll say. I don't know how well that works, though, because to your point, marketing words have meaning. And they clearly chose autopilot because they want to push things to be being fully self-driven. That's in Tesla's best interest. That's where they want to push the technology. And I've said this many times over the years on this show and on others. I mean, I think that the biggest thing that's going to hold us up on self-driving is actually the regulatory aspects more than the technology itself. But putting that aside, you know, it's not a fully, you know, self-driving thing, but people still treat it that way. And a big part of that is the name autopilot. So no matter what they're doing, like they are inherently with the way they promote this feature, you know, kind of letting people know, oh, you can actually treat this as if it's a fully autonomous driving solution when that's not the case. And so I don't know how well that, or I'm sure that's the argument they'll make, but I don't know if that argument actually, you know, changes reality, because if you're advertising something as being one thing, you can't be angry when people actually use it the way you're advertising it.
Well, one thing Tesla will be celebrating is the return of the tax credit. About 5 hours ago, the Senate passed that sweeping $430 billion bill, which fights inflation, fights climate change, lowers drug prices, and restores the tax credit in some circumstances for electric vehicles. Tesla, GM, had already sold more than 200,000 vehicles. That was the cap, so they lost that $7,500 tax credit. If this bill passes through the House intact and then it's signed by the president, that credit will be coming back to promote EV sales. By the way, you also get a $4,000 credit on used electric vehicles, which is good, I think. Do we still need, though, to subsidize EVs?
Yeah, I think so.
People are still reluctant. It's a little more expensive. You're paying for the battery.
You are. And also, it's been difficult for people to get cars in general, I think, at this point. So yeah. I think especially the used thing, you know, I mean, just because there's been such a kind of a shortage in certain areas, you know, for people getting cars, people are on wait lists and things like that. I think that anything you can do to encourage people to adopt more EVs and to get more in the ecosystem is good. I'm actually a bigger fan of the credit for the used EV sales than even like the first time thing. I think that's a really good thing to, you know, encourage people who might not have the money or the inclination to buy a new car to at least, okay, if I'm buying something used, I can still benefit from this credit. I'm a fan of this personally.
Yeah. It looks like there will be some income caps, and there'll be caps on the expense of the vehicle. It's not clear because this was, you know, this kind of went back and forth for a while. But it is at least some tax credit, and I guess when the smoke clears, we'll know exactly what the details are. But that's that bill's a big deal for climate change. It's Bill Gates last Sunday in the New York Times wrote an opinion piece saying we're on the verge of a remarkable moment for Congress and the country, asking the Senate to pass this bill, the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. He said it might be the single most important piece of climate legislation in American history because of the subsidies for alternative energy. He says many of the technologies we'll need to reach net zero emissions don't exist or are in early stages of development or still too expensive to scale up. Without new and expanded tax credits, government support, many of these technologies won't be developed. The incentives provide the private sector with the confidence to invest for the long term. So I guess Mr. Gates must be happy today. 27-hour session, including the Votorama that happened overnight as different amendments and modifications were proposed, most of them voted down. So good. I think good news. I'm willing to say good news. I know that's a little partisan, but I'm in favor of clean energy. Yeah.
And the drug costs.
Yeah. There's other benefits, non-tech benefits. Yeah,
well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Although this doesn't affect you because you're in Canada where drugs are free, right?
They not only are they're subsidized, like the government will cover the cost of drugs so that they're free for you. But it's just a lot of my clients are American and they can't afford their medication.
Insulin in particular.
Really,
yeah. There was a proposed insulin cap on private insurers. That did not make it through, but the $35 a month cap for Medicare patients did make it through. But the private health insurance market is not capped on insulin costs. This has been a big problem, I think.
It's a huge problem.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's such a horrible thing when
insulin
you see
is not an optional drug. You have it to save your life.
It's a horrific thing to think that people are choosing to eat or to choose to have their medication. Yeah. It's really scary. And like this is where some, you know, billionaires are actually doing some good. Like Mark Cuban started his drug company where he's, you know, giving to a little bit over cost for I think it's like was 200 different drugs. And like that's something where we can, you know, get behind and be able to say, you know what, we can do this better, because really, if we're not taking care of people, then what does any of this matter? I think it's called cost plus.
Cost plus, yeah. I'm not a huge Mark Cuban fan, but I feel like he's just a very lucky fellow who, was able to convince AOL to buy Broadcast.com for $1 billion. But in this case, yeah, maybe, I don't know. I don't know anything about it. I've read about it. It's a public benefit corporation, which means that, you know, they it's not a for-profit operation. And they're selling drugs at just slightly over cost, just to cover the costs. He says, I could make a fortune from this, but I won't. I've got enough money. I'd rather F up the drug industry in every possible way. I think, you know what? Now I'm a Mark Cuban fan. it's an interesting idea anyway. Boy, I'd love to see more billionaires F up other industries like this.
Right.
Right.
That's what they should be doing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose that means we should talk about Elon. Let's see. What are the I think I usually bury these. Here's my Elon story for the week. As you know, Twitter suing Elon Musk, saying you said you'd pay $44 billion for us, $54.20 a share. You agree to that. You better do it. They've gone to the Delaware Chancery Court. The trial starts October 17th. Elon countered sued. Saying a lot of, in my opinion, kind of ridiculous things. Now Elon is challenging Parag Agrawal, the CEO of Twitter, to a public debate about bots. Sure, Elon, that's a great idea.
It'd be more interesting if it was a boxing match, but okay.
Yeah, it might as well be.
It's just hilarious.
Fascinating that he's holding on to the bots argument so strongly.
Like. It's a little Trumpian in his adamancy, isn't it? And of course,
he might not have a legal standing if he's like, let's debate this in the court of public opinion. Why would he do that if he has any legal standing?
Here's a tweet, and Elon has really been litigating this via Twitter. I hereby challenge Paraga to a public debate about the Twitter bot percentage. Let him prove to the public that Twitter has less than 5% fake or spam daily users.
Dude, that's what the lawsuit's going to be about. Like, honestly, like, the courts are going to decide some of this stuff.
They sure
are. Why does he have to debate you? Everyone knows that Parag is not going to be the CEO of Twitter very much longer, whether Elon has forced to buy it or it goes into something else. Like, Parag is gone. So I don't even know why you care. Like, the lawyers are going to figure this out, dude. Like, not some sort of public debate on Twitter Spaces, as entertaining as that would be for all of us.
You really kind of wonder what is going through Elon's head sometimes. You really just, like,
he can't help himself. Like, you know, there's some people that every once in a while you should just put away the phone. Like my rule is, like, if you're really upset or, you know, passionate about something or angry, you probably shouldn't tweet. You shouldn't call. You shouldn't talk to anyone until you've kind of calmed down. But the problem is, when you're so powerful, who's going to take away your phone? But sometimes Elon comes out like, you know, one of these like mustache twirling, going to grab his glove and just, you know, like, you have offended me, sir. Let us 12 paces, please, with pistols, you know.
My name is Elon Musk. You killed my Twitter. Prepare to die.
Yeah. Well, and it feels very much like, I think a lot of people were accusing him of just making up excuses as to why he wanted to back out, and saying that he probably didn't have the money that he thought he would to be able to afford it. And it kind of just feels like he's not ready to go down without a fight in terms of being like, no, this is really the reason why, like, this is really why I'm so, you know, trying to back out of this. I don't know. That's just the impression I get.
He's also had to admit that the Cybertruck, which is missing in action, will end up costing more than he said. They were talking about a $40,000 price tag, which even now, I mean, it really doesn't seem quite right to begin with. He has now said the pricing, which was unveiled in 2019 and the reservation was $99. A lot has changed since then, so the specs and pricing will be different. I hate to give sort of a little bit of bad news, but I think there's no way to sort of have – there's a lot of sort ofs in here – to sort of have anticipated quite the inflation that we've seen. It's inflation's fault and the various issues. That's it. It's inflation. But he still says, good news, the Cybertruck will be one hell of a product and a damn fine machine. You could say stuff like that. That's legal. It's okay. That's just marketing, right? Still targeting mid-2023 for the start of production. And they'll be making it at the Gigafactory in Texas. If you're a reservation holder for the Giga Truck. It just, I think if you drove that thing around, that's the one that really looks like you're the Terminator. People would look askance at you, would they not?
Oh, absolutely. They should.
Oh, yeah.
They should.
Yes, they absolutely right. should.
Abrari says, then they'd be right.
Yes. It's not judgment. It's just fact at that point. Yeah.
There's no judgment. You just are a jerk, sir. In your jerky car. All right. Little break time. We will continue on in moments with our fabulous panel. What are you working on right now, Abrar? Has you got anything in the hopper?
I'm ready for Samsung Unpacked next week. So next week we'll be busy.
Ooh.
So stay tuned. Yes.
Okay. We're going to talk about that when we come back, actually.
Yeah.
We're getting to the season, aren't we? Next month, Apple probably with a lot of announcements, as always in September. Samsung likes to eclipse that a little bit. I imagine. Now, last year, Google waited till after Apple. Year before, Google did it before Apple. We'll see what Google does. They have that Pixel Watch coming in the Pixel 7, I guess, is what it is. And then, we'll talk about folding phones, which we expect to see in just a little bit. Christina Warren, senior dev advocate at GitHub. How are things at GitHub? You've been there now for
things
a couple of months, yeah?
Yeah, I've been there like 4 months now. It's awesome. Yeah, I know. Yeah, time has flown by. And it's great. I'm having a good time. GitHub Universe is going to be in San Francisco in November.
So oh, good.
Excited about that.
Maybe we'll see you. That would be great.
Yeah, actually, that would be amazing. I'll have to see when I'm coming into town, but that would be great if that's possible.
If we can drag you down or up.
I was going to say I would love to come up and visit.
That would be so much fun. And, of course, Georgia Dow. I've got all the videos, Georgia. So I am no longer anxious. I am calm. Session 4, no more anxiety. Here's parenting. That's too late for me. That ship has sailed. I'm sorry. I wish you'd put these videos out earlier. Boundaries and consequences. I'm hopeless on that one. Get the sleep you've always, look at that baby sleeping. Get the sleep you've always dreamed of and how to get out of depression. Are you going to do more of these videos? I love these.
No, we might do something a little bit different. We will see. We might continue with the series. We'll have to kind of take a look. We'll see.
If everybody runs to anxiety-videos.com and buys them, then maybe there'll be more. How about that?
Maybe.
Yeah. The market is speaking as we speak. Georgia Dow. And
a lot of anxiety out there.
Oh, God. You couldn't have timed it better, right?
Yeah.
You know what? Actually, I'm curious. Lisa and I both have noticed this. We've now gone to, there was a music festival in Petaluma yesterday. We went somewhere else in the public the day before. I have this theory that somehow over the 2 years of COVID where we were all just staying home, we all got desocialized and we no longer know that other people exist. There's this, I don't know if it's, maybe it's different in Canada. I don't know. There's this sense where people are wandering around. They're not even aware. You know, people just jump in front of you. Oh, yeah, we went to the county fair. And people just walk up in the middle of the line, and now I'm in line like no one else exists. Is it possible that you forgot because of COVID?
Being with people is a skill, right? And so that's why a lot of those personal, interpersonal skills, the newer generations are having much more difficulty. There's much more social anxiety because they're doing a lot of interaction through a computer screen or just by text. And learning how to read body image and body language is really difficult if you're not socialized to do it. We used to be so bored. We'd want to hang around with each other. And now we're like such an antithesis, like stay away
from me. COVID. Don't touch me.
People are an illness. So we're like, really stay away.
And yeah, people
so
equal COVID.
Those skills.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't go to a movie theater because it's full of teenagers who have completely forgotten there's anybody else in the world. And they're making a mess. They're talking. They're throwing popcorn around. It's like they're at home.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing. But then I watch videos that are like movies from like, I don't know, whatever, 7 years ago, 10 years ago. And it's like a rave scene and everyone's spitting and yelling at each other. And I'm like, oh, that's gross. Too.
Right.
You just see spit and stuff. I'm
right.
Like,
we didn't even know. Oh, my God. What's wrong with us? Look how close he's standing. Oh, my God. Isn't that funny? I know. Isn't that hysterical? Yeah.
Oh, there are all of these weird changes in society that we have to adapt to. But if you don't do something, you lose the skill. And socialization is another one of the skills that
Have you gotten COVID yet, or are you still a unicorn?
I have not yet gotten COVID as of yet. It's
how about you, Abrar?
I didn't know.
Have you been able to dodge?
I have not been able to dodge. I had a few months ago, but it was actually great because it was like, it's like a free booster.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Now that I survived, I didn't die.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
I'm going, oh, good. Now I got a little extra.
And
I
get a week off to be able to just chill and relax, and everyone has to serve you. There are some benefits.
Yeah. Right. And it was very mild. I mean, I'm lucky. Yeah. Lisa did not get it as mildly. She still got aches and pains and cognitive fog and so forth, but relatively mild. I mean, we didn't have to go on a ventilator. And I feel like, I don't know, on the one hand, it was like, oh, we had this 2 years of absolute insane, like washing our hands five times a day for 20, singing happy birthday over and over. And it's like, and then now it's like, I don't care now. I don't care anymore.
I think we've realized we're not going to die. Well, hopefully, right? Like, so we're like, okay, you know, I might feel down for a bit, but it's not
it's like
life or death.
More like a cold. Yeah. It's not as bad as the flu, at least. How about you, Christina? Have you managed to dodge it?
No, I had it in December.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, I got the Omicron, kind of the same as everybody else. So,
I'm sure we got, because we got it in 2 weeks ago on that cruise, I'm sure we got BA5, the latest. So I feel like,
I'm so trendy.
I'm trendy.
You've got the latest. I was going to say, you've got the latest thing. Because I still only have the one booster because, you know, that's what they've been like encouraging people to do.
I know.
And now they're like, well, don't get the second booster, you know, because we're waiting for the new vaccines. And I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. just tell me what shot I need to get and I'll get it. It's fine. So.
And with all of that and all that sighs of relief, it is still very dangerous. There are a lot of people who have immune compromised or they're older or whatever. And so absolutely, I'm still wearing the mask and very careful. I don't want to get anybody sick. But I feel like some of the pressure is off me. Like, right? It's like, all right. Okay.
Yeah. And I feel like really bad for the people who lost sense of taste and smell. That I feel like I would not have been able to tolerate.
Yeah, Lisa, well, you know what's really bad about that? When it comes back, and somebody was telling me this is an evolutionary thing to protect you. The disgusting taste and smell come back first so that you won't eat bad food and bad stuff. So everything tastes horrible for a while. And Lisa's that's at rough. That stage where...
Oh, that's horrible.
Oh, I know.
So going to a restaurant?
Oh, my God. What? Forget that. She kissed me and she went, ew! So forget that. It's not good. Yeah. So anyway.
Oh, sorry.
I know. She said... What are you eating? I said, no, I'm fine. She said, oh, you smell bad.
Okay. I'm like, no, you're not. You're like, oh, no.
Oh, no. Never thought that would happen. Anyway, yes, be careful. I'm not advocating in any way letting your guard down. That's clearly still a problem. We don't in public, but at the same time, you know, kind of like the pressure's off a little bit. Anyway, a little bit. I'm glad you all are here and survived. Let's put it that way. And Georgia, good luck in keeping your super, what do they call you? What is it? Super Dodger. You're a Super Dodger.
So far. Super so Dodger. Good. Like, you know.
Do you never go anywhere outside? But you got kids in school, right?
We just came back from Florida, so.
Oh. Well, stay away from
you know,
me.
Went to Universal, went to Disney. I know.
What? And you didn't catch anything. Wow.
No, but we did wear our masks at Disney. Yeah. I know. Not the coolest of look, but.
No. Wearing mine. In fact.
Yeah.
I was told I couldn't get on the plane with this. I'm wearing a respirator now, not just because
we have them too.
I needed better masks, and these don't wear out as fast. So, but you look like Bane.
It looks awesome. I have to say, actually, Leo, you look really cool. I'm sorry.
I look like a fighter pilot.
It is really cool.
Like, I like it.
Call me Maverick. Cool looking. Yeah.
Yeah. Good movie.
All right. All right. Anyway, please, everybody, we don't want to lose anybody. Stay safe. Protect yourself. We'll get through this. We'll get through this someday, somehow. Our show today brought to you by Podium. I have to say, one of the really interesting changes in society, thanks to COVID and quarantine, is we've gotten really used to text messages, communicating via text, getting a text, your food's on the way, or getting a text, you could pick up your groceries now. And you know, it's the best way to do business. It is better than email, better than phone calls, better than anything. If you own a small business and you've survived the last couple of years, and I know they've been hard, not just supply chain issues, demand you didn't expect, and you've got to, you know, all that stuff. Businesses that thrive right now are the ones who, you know, in recession, you got to plan for growth. This is an opportunity. And the businesses who are planning for that are thriving. Podium helps your small business stay ahead of the curve with modern messaging tools. It's kind of remarkable. We have a few businesses in our small town that use Podium, and I love it. For instance, I leave the dentist's office. Before I am two steps away, I get a text saying, how was our service? Leave a review for us on Yelp or Google Business. It's amazing. Every once in a while, and I don't like this when I mentioned it before, I get a text message from our local ice cream parlor saying, we haven't seen you in a while. Here's a 20% coupon. Oh, thanks. Now I got to go get ice cream. It works. And if you are a business, a plumber, a landscaper, playing phone tag with potential customers, people hate calling. They don't like to do that. They'd rather send you a message and you can message back and you don't play that phone tag. It's the best way to stay in touch with you. If you're running a business and the only way to get in touch with you is with a phone number, you're going to be losing business. Podium gives businesses the tools to compete with the convenience offered by big businesses like Amazon now, right? From healthcare providers to plumbers, over 100,000 businesses are texting with customers through Podium, Podium. Customers love the convenience and business loves the results. One car dealer sold her $50,000 truck in 4 text messages. That's happening more and more, right? You get a text message, hey, we got a great deal right now on a Ford Lightning. Come on in and you can sell it right away. A jeweler sold a $5,000 ring, coordinated curbside pickups, the whole thing, the whole transaction through texts. You can also collect with Podium. People can pay you through Podium. A dentist sent payment requests through texts instead of bills in the mail, got 70% of their outstanding collections in just 2 weeks. Because it's easy. It's low friction. Oh, yeah, okay. Here, let me send you the money. With Podium's all-in-one inbox, you can do even more than just chat. You can get online reviews. Just send out a link. You can collect payments fast from anywhere. You could send marketing campaigns to get a response. You know, the read percentage on text messages is well over 90%. So much better than email, than any other way of communicating. And your customers actually appreciate it. They actually like it. See how Podium can grow your business. They've got a demo waiting for you right now. Podium, podium.com/twit. Especially for small businesses, this is a great way to stay in touch with your customers. Podium.com/twit. Podium, let's grow. Let's see. Washington Post, great article by Jeffrey Fowler. Here's why your gadgets die so quickly. Electronics are built with death dates. Let's not keep them a secret. And he actually put together a gadget graveyard, which I thought was really good. The hidden death dates on popular devices. These are devices that the batteries cannot be replaced. As you know, lithium ion batteries have a certain number of charge cycles. After that, you can't charge them anymore. If you've got AirPods, after 2 years, in most cases, you're just going to have to throw them away and get a new one. Apple sells, has a, quote, replacement deal where you pay $49 for one AirPod. But they don't, I don't know, maybe they recycle it when you send it back to them, but I suspect there's quite a few AirPods in the landfill. Amazon Fire HD 8 tablet. Amazon won't disclose how many recharges it can take. Amazon offers no battery replacement service. You can go to iFixit, I think, and get a battery. And while it's not easy, you could, I guess, replace it. But I would guess most Amazon tablets end up in landfill, like AirPods. iPhones, good on Apple. They will, for $69, replace it, the battery. Same with the MacBooks. Not so much with the Bose QC35 noise-canceling headphones. No out-of-warranty battery replacement service. What do you think? You know, Brar, you cover consumer technology. Do you ever talk about this as an issue?
Yeah, I think, you know, this conversation around electronic waste is something that's really ramping up. And, you know, that's one side of it. And the other side of it is also, we don't feel like we are ready to let go of our devices as quickly as we have to. And it's really annoying that it is like, okay, I'm approaching the 2 year mark of how long I've had my phone, and I know I have to replace it, and there's nothing I can do about it. And so I think, you know, I love that this article is like, let's discuss the fact that this is like not something that we should just be accepting. And I think that, you know, one of the things that it brings up that I think is really interesting is the marketing angle. Like, in order for us to make your phone as slim and waterproof as we want to make it, sorry, you're not going to be able to access the battery. And we've kind of just gone along with it. Like, okay, in the name of innovation, sure. Okay, these design changes are something that's going to make it, you know, better. But it is really unfortunate and wasteful and a pain for consumers to have to constantly feel like they have to switch out, you know, their devices also in the name of keeping up with trends. And I feel like Apple does a really good job of making people feel like it's time for them to upgrade to a new device, not because they feel like they want to, yes, but because they have to look like they're on top of it.
Aren't we all looking,
fun of you.
Looking forward to the iPhone 14 in September and all the, ooh, shiny, yeah, shiny, shiny.
Yeah,
I admit, absolutely. I'm, you know, I fall for that too. By the way, it's not just at the end of the life. About 70, according to Apple, about 70% of the carbon emissions come from manufacture. So the longer you, it's not just throwing it out, the longer you can keep it in service, that's one more phone, AirPod, something that doesn't have to be manufactured. And that's a big source of emissions. Yeah, I think, look, it's not going to go away, but it's important to be aware of it. And that's just to kind of unconsciously say, oh yeah, let's get it. I wish, honestly, I really wish, you know what? My battery never dies on my wired headphones. I wish
they never will.
It just drives me crazy that it really it looks like Apple and Samsung and others. It's just because they want to sell Bluetooth headphones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's the rumor is that the next iPad will not have a headphone jack. There is no reason for that. There's plenty of room.
Mm-hmm. I hate that. And I know I'm probably the only one. Christina, don't judge me. Don't judge me.
I won't judge you.
Look
at Christina's
wired.
On wired headphones right now.
She's on wired right now. But I bet that Christina has like all of the best of Bluetooth. But yes. I'm not going to
judge you. No, I don't blame you for it. Honestly, I don't blame you for it at all. Like
I just want it to work.
And by the way, wired even works better.
I want it to plug into, and I know it's going to be there, and it's not going to play on like my HomePod, mm-hmm, and one of my clients are suddenly talking to me. It's on a HomePod somewhere,
yes,
or it's in my car Bluetooth when it shouldn't be. And so I carry around, I'll be honest, I steal from Renee because he has all of the, well, like all these little packages of like all of the
little dongles. And,
he doesn't even open them, right? He just has them sitting there and fully wrapped.
Like 1,000. I'm suddenly like, oh, I'm going to grab two of them. And I carry both, like the 3.5 millimeter, and like, yeah, I carry them all in my purse because I like wired for everything. And I hate charging batteries. I'm lazy as can be. I lose the bloody things. Then when I finally decide to use them, 100%, I've drained them by that time. And then I'm just angry and frustrated. And yeah, so I am so old school that way. I'm sorry. Everyone can judge me. Send the all of your hate to like at Twit.
No, you're right.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
And I mean, honestly, I think we could put pressure on Apple to keep the headphone jack. Put it back.
There's because here's the thing. Like, AirPods are good enough, and some of the Bluetooth stuff, even though there are those frustrations that I totally agree with, the convenience for a lot of us, we would still use, like, I would still use AirPods. I would still use, you know, like, over-the-ear, like, maybe I'd have them plugged in, maybe I wouldn't, it would depend, but I would probably still use wireless more often than not. Like, that's not going to be changing just because my phone has a headphone jack on it. Like, if you are, in my opinion, like, if you're somebody who's choosing to spend $200 on a pair of AirPods, it's because you appreciate that convenience, not so much because like that's the only way you can connect them into your phone. So,
except that you have to buy some sort of Bluetooth, or
use the stupid wired headphones that come in the box. But like, you know, that have the lightning connector. I'm just saying, like, $200.
Do you think anybody does that?
Yeah, last year it became like a trend. It was like an aesthetic thing where there were a number of like very big fashion influencers who were doing that. So
really,
Georgia, you're like on trend, actually. Yeah. It's kind of like a weird throwback to, you know, like the 2000s, you know, like aesthetic. I don't know.
Long enough, it comes back around.
I'm going to say like everything that everyone that I wore, like when I was like in late high school and in college is like,
it's back
popular again. Yeah. And so that's part of it, but I'm just saying, like, obviously they want you to use Bluetooth, but I think that even if you had a headphone jack, I still think that there are enough people who would still be buying Bluetooth headphones. It's not like that would stop. Like, I had Bluetooth headphones. I had, you know, wireless Beats before AirPods.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but I actually have...
Go ahead, Abrar.
Sorry.
Abrar, what do you use?
I actually have a Galaxy device, and so I have a headphone jack, but these are wireless normally.
You're wearing Beats right now, aren't you?
And I'm wearing Beats, so I love them, actually.
You're a hipster.
They are. No, they're great. I have the same ones.
I have to say, those are a very pretty color. Rose gold.
Rose gold Beats.
I love them.
I like it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the approval. Yes. But I love over-ear headphones, too, because earbuds, I can't. I don't know how you guys do earbuds, because I cannot stand. I feel like I'm just like throwing something inside. Like, I
now you wear a hijab. I should point out for those not watching video. Could you put the best advantage of that? Well, not the only, but the best one advantage of it is if you did an AirPod fell out, at least you wouldn't lose it, right? It would end up in a scarf.
That's so true.
But you would end up in your clothing, and you'd have to like still
right.
So it would be safe, you know, but you'd still have to do the
right.
You wouldn't swallow it by accident. Let's put it that way.
The funny thing is, my friend the other day.
Your AirPods.
My friend the other day, like, had her AirPods in. We couldn't see it because she also wears a hijab. And then she just suddenly starts talking, like, into her. And we're like, what? And she's like, oh, I keep them in all the time.
Yeah, there we go. You should watch the Blackmore video I'm going to do. We're going to be talking about that. When is talking to yourself? Okay.
Oh, all right, okay. Yeah. It's a sign, right? Sign of, I've always talked to myself. I don't think it's a sign of madness.
Yourself is totally
fine. I agree. Yes. I talk to myself all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And answering back is also still totally healthy. People are like, you can talk to yourself.
I have
to
reach
back. No. Answer yourself. That's okay. Totally fine.
It's okay to answer yourself, but not in a different voice. So you go, what do you think?
No, they go,
well, I don't know. What do you think? Well, I don't know. Maybe I should do that. No, you don't do that. That's dangerous.
Okay. Noted. I will not do that.
Don't do that.
Okay.
As long as you know you're doing it.
That's the kind of thing the Joker would do. Don't do it. That's scary. That's scary. So actually, completely peripherally, but it is. You mentioned hipsters. By the way, I still have some wide ties that I am not throwing out. I don't think wide ties are ever coming back, though. I got to tell you. You never know.
We have to wait a while.
For a while, vinyl, right? Everybody who's into vinyl. There is a big scandal going on in the vinyl world. Did you read about this?
Oh, I read that this morning. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Yeah.
So MoFi, M-O-F-I, is a company that's been around for decades. They're actually up our way in Sebastopol. And their claim to fame was they're selling vinyl records that are mastered from the original non-digital analog masters of, you know, classics, you know, Asia from Steely Dan or even Thriller, which was mastered to tape. And they were selling it this way for a long time until a record store owner, Phoenix Record Shop owner, said, according to pretty reliable sources, MoFi, Mobile Fidelity, has been using digital files instead to create these vinyl records. They are not analog masters. And then a number of people spoke up and said, you know, that makes sense, because if they're making these vinyl records from analog masters, they have to keep rewinding the tape and playing it, rewinding the tape. They're not, nobody's going to allow them to do that. So, in fact, it's now come out. Engineers, MoFi didn't want to admit it, but engineers from MoFi have started to say, yeah, we started using digital stream. It's called Direct Stream Digital Technology. In 2011, on a release of Tony Bennett's I Left My Heart in San Francisco, and by the end of 2011, 60% of their vinyl releases used digital sources. You're laughing because of the hipsters.
I am laughing. Okay, I'm making fun of them, but Leo, you don't want to. I got really into vinyl during the pandemic, so I'm also laughing at myself because I've spent like thousands of dollars in vinyl records over the last 2 years, and I wish that I was. Yeah.
Do you have a turntable that's in a sandbox with special?
Well, the thousands includes the turntable that I got, but yeah. So you know, I'm part of like a monthly like record of the month club thing. It's stupid. I bought all of the variations of Taylor Swift's Folklore album on vinyl, yes. Like all like seven versions, right? I've got them all. So I'm laughing at myself in terms of this too, because I had looked at maybe getting that the Thriller album that they have up for pre-order, which is like $100, which they're claiming came from like the analog like master. I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe that would be really cool. Now I'm like, you absolute idiot, because they're just sourcing it from a digital master, and they can say, oh, well, it sounds this good and whatnot. Okay, well, no, this is just more proof that people who buy into audiophile stuff, which again, I'm absolutely one of these people, like we're basically flushing our money down the toilet for minute things that we claim, differences we claim we can hear that we absolutely cannot hear, for the aesthetic and for other things. So I love this. It's also hilarious that the initial response from the community was to attack this record store guy and be like, you're wrong. And then like the company admits it and it's like, oh yeah, sorry, our bad.
According to Washington Post, the fallout of the MoFi revelation has thrown the audiophile community into something of an existential crisis.
Right, exactly. Because it's like, but I swore that I could hear the difference.
It sounded better, I swear.
And now I know it's a placebo, which is, I think most of us who are part of kind of the hobby would admit that we know that we're just paying more to pay more. But it's dumb.
It's joy. It's
it does.
Joy, though.
There is an aesthetic.
There's the aesthetic I love. And yes. Shit.
And you can like full. And I think it's the same thing with people that like books, which I like paper books with like pages with stuff written on it that I have to go through and I lose the page and all of that frustration.
Totally.
But I prefer the experience, even though it's much easier to read it on my phone where I don't have to like have a light and can't see the letters because the light's not bright enough. But there's something that's a joyful thing about actually being able to hold and own and manipulate something that isn't just digital. So yeah. Go for it. Enjoy it.
As a visitor from the age of vinyl, I actually had vinyl records when they were the only way to get music. I remember buying my first record was a Beatles 45. I Want to Hold Her Hand. It's not about the sound quality. That sounded like crap. but there is an aesthetic to taking an album out of the sleeve. They've got the liner notes. There's a whole thing. You clean it with the disc washer, 3 drops. That's all. And then you put it on the thing. You gently lower the needle on there. I understand the aesthetic of it. It doesn't.
I want one of the really old ones, you know, like gramophone kind of like look to it.
Yeah. But I mean, to say, oh, this is magically sounds. Now, MoFi is saying, hey, look, even though we're using digital, we get the masters and we very carefully make this digital version.
And they might actually have like a better master, because a lot of times the reason people get mad about digital masters isn't because digital there's anything wrong with it. It's because the mastering process or the remastering has been like crunched and compressed to the point that it sounds terrible. And you can actually hear, like, and this isn't a BS audio file thing. You can do like A/B sampling where there have been conclusive differences, where you can take like a CD that was pressed in like 1990 and one that was pressed in 2015. And it's the same album, and they sound very different because of the way the mastering process works. So it's possible that they still do a superior job with mastering and that they still have a better source material they're doing from this vinyl. But since a big part of their, you know, like whole thing has been like, oh, we're coming from like directly from the analog, which is especially with the fact that like vinyl plants are almost impossible for people to even get time on. Like things are backlogged so much that the additional time that you're adding to that would be untenable to do, especially to do like a large batch thing like the Thriller album, where they said they do 40,000 copies. Like there's no way.
You don't have to run the tape for every single vinyl pressing, but you have to run it more than once. You're making a number of shellacks. So
that's what I'm saying. You have to do it at certain times, especially if you're going to be claiming you want like high fidelity recordings, right? Where you don't want it to sound like that. I want to hold your hand.
Fourth generation.
That you had. Yeah. Exactly. You don't want it to be that way. So I mean, I think that some of it is probably much ado about nothing, but it is funny to like see people who are still trying to convince themselves that it's better. That said, like they also sell, I wasn't aware of this, they sell super audio CDs. I'm super excited to see that the SACD market is coming back a little bit.
Is it?
Yeah, it seems to be, which there are like some pre-orders and coming soon re-releases on SACD. That's actually much more exciting to me. So
you know what else?
Go ahead.
Sorry, did you also, you mentioned Taylor Swift when she'd released Folklore. Yeah. She also released it on cassette. And I thought that was bizarre.
I love that. Yeah, so cassettes
again,
have had a moment.
That's hipster, right?
That's That's completely aesthetic. That's been big for 5 or 6 years now, where you've seen, especially with younger people, wanting to get it for the aesthetic. And like, I bought Radiohead when they released the 25th anniversary of OK Computer. I got it on mini disc. So that was, which is like the ultimate, you know, like, and I do actually have a mini disc player, so I can play it back. But that was like the ultimate, like, really, Christina, really? And I think I got it. I think I got that on. There was a cassette thing there too. But you're right. Yeah, she releases stuff on cassette. What I'm waiting for, we're seeing SACD come back. I'm waiting for actual just CDs to come back, right? That I'm waiting for.
Look, it's a digital recording. Not? When you download it, it's identical to the CD. I mean, don't download an MP3 or AAC, but if you download a lossless version of it, it's identical to the 44.1 CD.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just looking forward to the aesthetic coming back. I just want to see the kids walking around with giant Walkmans. Yeah, okay. I don't care. To be honest with you, I don't care. I just want to see people walking around with giant, like, you know, Walkmans again. Like, I think that would just be funny.
I think you can make the case. I remember walking by the Dolby offices in San Francisco many years ago, and a Dolby engineer came out and said, "Psst, Leo, come here." And he brought me in, and they had a very famous theater in there with really good Revel speakers. I mean, just a really nice setup. And he played an A-B comparison for me between it. Now, it was Steely Dan. It was not a very complex piece of music, but between an analog and a digital, I think it was even an MP3 recording. It might have been an AAC. But remember, Dolby was very much into these digital compression technologies, and it was indistinguishable. And then I've also had people say, now listen carefully, and you can hear, you know, there's some loss of fidelity in like the cymbal here. And if they teach you and tell you what to listen to, you can kind of tell an MP3, especially a 128 kilobit MP3, isn't as good as, say, you know, a lossless version of the CD. But most people, let's face it, they're listening on those crappy AirPods.
Well, this is the thing, right?
Like Bluetooth, this is always, you know.
Well, this is the hilarious thing about the vinyl world. So if you go to like the r/vinyl like subreddit and stuff, you have a lot of people who are wanting to get turntables and other things. And then one of the first questions they ask is, okay, so how do I listen to this with Bluetooth? How do I connect this to my Sonos? How do I do this other stuff?
No.
Well, and you can do it. Like I do actually have my turntable connected to my Sonos, but I'm primarily, when I want to listen to vinyl, I have like my very expensive like headphones plugged in directly to my amp, plugged into my turntable, and that's how I'm enjoying the experience. But it is very funny that people will want to, on the one hand, take on the aesthetic, but on the other hand, immediately want to be able to listen to it wirelessly. And it's like, okay, you do understand what you've just done here. You've just completely given up the entire thing. Like, I get it. It's nice to be able to drop a needle on something and do that. But anything you want to try to claim about like audio fidelity is completely out the window as soon as you are, you know,
Bluetooth
using an analog
is so
to digital
compressed.
Converter.
Yeah.
Bluetooth, but even just doing an analog to digital converter, because in that case, in most cases, you're taking, okay, something that was digital became analog. Now it's becoming digital again. Like, come on.
What kind of turntable do you have?
It's the inception of everything.
It's inception, exactly. What kind of turntable do you have, Christina?
I can't remember right now, but it was
you're no audiophile.
Like,
I'm
going to
kick you right off
I got it like 2 years ago, and I'm trying to remember which one it was. It was
you know what
that
I love about you, though? And you're an enthusiast, and I recognize this because I'm kind of the same way, where you get into something, and then you have to do it in its entirety, whatever it is, right? And then you move on. Now it's the
right.
Next
thing. That was basically the thing. Like, I got really into it for a period of time, and I'm not really as much anymore. But
God bless the enthusiast. That's the joy in life. The passion for something you care so much about.
It's a project. That's what it is. It's from project.
Yeah.
So
I'm the same way. Yeah. So, and you know what? I don't know about you, but and Georgia, you probably confirm this, but it's because I'm ADD that. Even as a kid, the way I got functional with my attention deficit was I would hyper focus, and so everything for me was a project, was a hyper focused thing, because it's the only way I could really do it. And I think probably most of our audience is the same way. I'm guessing.
Yeah, and it gives you all that wonderful dopamine as it's new and exciting.
It feels good.
And fun.
Yeah,
and after a while. Dopamine, other stuff come, and then you move on to learning and experiencing something else. It's there's nothing wrong with it. Enjoy, have fun. Life's too short.
See, we're okay. Don't mind that. Speaking of gadget graveyards, Epson a little bit of hot water here. This is from the Fight to Repair Substack newsletter, citing danger of ink spills. Epson programs end of life for some printers. We've seen this with other printer companies where the printer just stops working. In this case, it's particularly the L series Epson printers, which are not the cheap ones. They're not the cheap inkjet printers. There is an ink pad in there, which Epson describes as a porous pad in the printer that collects, distributes, and very importantly, contains the ink that is not used on printed pages. Over time, these pads wear out, and there's actually a counter built into your printer. And when that counter reaches a certain number of print jobs, your printer will just stop working. It just won't print anymore, and you got to buy a new one. Or maybe you can recycle it or get Epson to replace the pad. It turns out the pad replacement, number of people have done it themselves, is very simple, very inexpensive. Epson doesn't sell those pads. But the reason Epson says that they disable the printers once those pads are full of ink, this is the quote, "The printers are designed to stop operating at a point where further use without replacing the ink pads could create risks of property damage from ink spills or safety issues related to excess ink contacting an electrical component."
So ridiculous.
You got to wonder, is this really to protect people from ink spills, or is it really to make a little extra money on a printer because you've been keeping it in service too long? This came up when a lecturer at University of New Haven in Connecticut, Mark Tavern, tweeted, "My wife's very expensive Epson printer just gave a message saying it had reached the end of its service life and proceeded to brick itself. Apparently, she can pay to service it or buy a new one, even though it was working fine." Outrageous. 4,500 likes, 800 retweets. Epson does make for Windows users a special program, the Waste Ink Pad Counter Reset Program, that lets you change the counter. But there's only a version for Windows 10, 8, 7, Vista, and XP. There's no Mac version. And it can only be used once, and it will allow printing for a short period of time, says Epson.
I am sure someone will be hacking that very soon.
Yeah.
If not already, like, it's just one of these ridiculous things where, you know, like, you buy something, you're supposed to own it, and, yeah. like, if it happens, like, the battery dies because the battery actually dies, like, I'm already a little bit salty about that. But to have some arbitrary idea that, you know what, we're going to protect you from ink damage because that would be so horrible. Like, if anyone's ever changed ink on a printer knows that they really don't care about ink damaging anything
no.
and everything.
Right. Here's a guy. This is a video from 2017. A guy just kind of tore up some foam, put a hole in it, and replaced it. Just, you know, shaped some foam rubber to fit in there, replaced it. Of course, then you have to hack the printer to say, you know, hey, new foam pads in there, new ink pads in there. So you can do it yourself. And Epson doesn't really want you to do it through them or do it yourself. They want you to buy a new printer.
We're getting gaslit by Epson.
Gaslit.
The oil's done. There we go. That's, you know, oil lit. Trendy. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Gaslit by Epson. Wow.
That should have been the headline.
I think it is. That's the headline.
Yeah.
Let's see what's our timing. Maybe I should take a little break here. I don't want to run this too long. I have a very good sponsor to talk about anyway, so I'm happy to do this. Our show this week and often is brought to you by userway.org. Userway.org. I'm talking about making your website ADA compliant, accessible. Not only is it the right thing to do, because you're opening up your website to a much larger group, 60 million plus people, you have a responsibility to make your site accessible. It's a public entity, so you got to make it accessible. And with UserWay, it's easy. That was my biggest concern was, oh, I can't afford it or it's going to be too hard. No, UserWay is really affordable and it's really easy. An incredible, it's AI powered. It tirelessly enforces all the accessibility guidelines, the WCAG, WCAG guidelines. And I love this. So do our engineers. It's one line of JavaScript. That's it. Because UserWay is so good, it's used by more than a million websites, including the big guys, Coca-Cola, Disney, eBay. These are companies that really have to be accessible, and UserWay can do that. As you get bigger, they scale with you. If they can handle Disney, absolutely, they can handle you. They make best-in-class enterprise-level accessibility tools available to you, your small or medium-sized business. And then as you scale, you need UserWay, and you're ready. It just makes business sense. Some of the biggest problems, nav menus. Very difficult. So the way this works, if you're blind or you're using accessibility tools, there is what they call an accessibility layer. That's what the screen reader sees. So really what UserWay does is make sure that all the information available to the front page to the sighted user is available to the browser in the accessibility layer. It changes colors. Now, you've got your Pantone color for your business. Of course, we do too. It doesn't change that, but it adjusts hue and luminance so it's easier for people with vision issues to read. So UserWay will generate alt tags. That's one of the reasons it needs AI. It can actually see the picture and generate an alt tag that matches the picture automatically. You can go in if you want. You can modify it, of course. It fixes violations like vague links, fixes broken links, makes sure that your website uses accessible colors. And you'll get a detailed report of all the violations that were fixed on your website so you know exactly what it did. Plus, you can work with it. UserWay integrates seamlessly with your site builder software. Let UserWay help your business meet its compliance goals, improve the experience for your users. UserWay can make any website fully accessible, ADA compliant, and everyone who visits can browse seamlessly, customize it to fit their needs. It's a great way to show your brand's commitment to the millions of people with disabilities. It's the right thing to do. UserWay. It can make any website fully accessible and ADA compliant. With UserWay, everyone who visits your site can browse seamlessly, customize it to fit their needs. We've got it on our website. Go to twit.tv. Go to the lower right there. Click that accessibility symbol. You'll see all the things it does with one line of code to our website. And you know what I really appreciate? It's a great way to showcase your brand's commitment to millions of people with disabilities. You wouldn't want to lock them out of your site. Of course not. Go to userway.org/twit and you'll get 30% off UserWay's AI-powered accessibility solution. Just book a short call, get their accessibility guide. They're there for you. UserWay, making the internet accessible for everyone. Visit userway.org/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. We had a fun week this week, and I think Benito has a little movie to show us, showing us why. You know what? The chip business is in a big turmoil right now. It's very interesting to see what's going to happen.
I wonder how this is going to impact Frito-Lay.
Previously on Twit. Tech News Weekly.
Actually, my friend, neighbor, he lives just a couple blocks away. Alan Cecil joins to talk about how his team used his TazBot to do some pretty incredible things on the Nintendo 64, specifically on the Ocarina of Time.
This is our mascot, and we use him to play video games perfectly at Games Done Quick and other charity events.
All about Android.
Your phone needs to be repaired. You drop your phone, the display is broken. There's a nervousness around, like, here's my phone with everything that's important to me. I'm going to send it in just to get this repair done. Well, Samsung is making a change to add something called a repair mode, that you put it into repair mode. It locks the phone data down. So all it offers is the default installed apps.
This Week in Google.
I quit my job to buy and resell used books on Amazon. Now I use my six-figure income to travel the world.
I just got some old Life magazines for $2. I'm going to bet I can sell that for more on eBay.
Well, I have this fine picture of a handsome gentleman, former TV Guide critic.
If somebody's going to buy, if some schmuck is going to buy even that.
Twit.
I'm pretty sure they're not traveling the world.
The big bucks from selling Jeff Jarvis portraits.
Mwah. Bye.
Thank you for that that moment in time. We are talking about the week's tech news with our great panel. First time on the show, a newbie, but boy, you fit in great. Abrar Alhidi from CNET. Thank you very much for being here this week, Abrar. They were right when they said how wonderful you are.
That's so kind of you. Thank you.
Old friend Georgia Dow, always great to see you from YouTube. Of YouTube fame, youtube.com/Georgia Dow. And Christina Warren, who we have known through at least four jobs, I think.
Yeah.
Mashable, Microsoft, GitHub. Where were you before Mashable? I think that's where we met.
We met at Mashable, and then I was at Gizmodo, and then Microsoft, and now GitHub. So, yeah, four jobs. Yeah. That's over a decade. That's not that many.
Yeah. It's been a long time, actually.
No, I stay at jobs typically a long time, but we've been, I mean, I think I met you for the first time in like 2009.
Like at a Macworld or something.
Yeah, it was.
That's how long ago that was. As you may know, there's concern about quantum computing and encryption, particularly encryption keys. And so the National Institutes for Standards and Time has set up a competition to come up with new public key crypto that will survive quantum computing. There are four contenders. Well, there were four contenders. One of them is now out of the running. And it only took a single core PC and an hour to do it. This article from Dan Gooden in Ars Technica. Leave it to mathematicians to muck up what looked like an impressive new algorithm. One of the reasons they have these competitions, though, is to come up with these improved crypto techniques and then let people bang on it to make sure it really, really will work. The new attack breaks the algorithm called Psyche, S-I-K-E. This is one of the four replacement algorithms that NIST says need new testing. The attack has no impact on the other four algorithms selected by NIST as approved standards. So we have four that are approved, and then four they thought were interesting, but let's test them. Well, Psyche is out. Super singular isogeny key encapsulation. Researchers from the Computer Security and Industrial Cryptography Group at KU Leuven wrote a paper called An Efficient, Efficient Key Recovery Attack. Used complex mathematics and a single traditional PC to recover the encryption keys in an hour. By the way, they are now eligible for a $50,000 reward from Microsoft. Nice work if you can get it. But I think we are coming along with post-quantum computing. Now, if we could just invent some post-quantum computing computers.
Right.
None of them are really that impressive yet. Pearson wants to make a little more money on its textbooks, which are already really expensive. Pearson, which is, I think, the world's largest textbook publisher, and my former publisher, I might add, has decided, here's what we do. We sell our book for, you know, for $100, but we'll also include with that an NFT so that we can recapture some of the resales in the used book market. CEO of Pearson, Andy Bird, says in the analog world, a Pearson textbook was resold up to 7 times, and we could only participate in the first sale. Oh, oh. The move to digital helps diminish the secondary market, and technology like blockchain and NFTs allows us to participate in every sale of that particular item as it goes through its life. Evil? Yeah, you don't seem...
It's greedy. It's so very greedy when... And these are students. Like, it's just...
Yep.
Like, no thought at all or care about what happens. Like, we want to educate society, and I think education should be free. And then we suddenly start to gouge students. Like, just... Oh, you can't... You just can't get behind when they're just trying to, like... Even reselling of textbooks was really expensive for students to be able to deal
with. Oh, yeah.
They didn't make a piece of it. So now, oh, poor them. Mm-hmm. Like the world's smallest violin crashed and burned. I'm sorry. Nothing. Nothing for me.
Yeah, no, I was talking about this on my podcast, Rocket, and I did actually think of the only possible good thing that could come from this. If they decide to put this on the blockchain or whatever under some sort of DRM, that DRM will be cracked instantly, in which case we could then just have a very easy way to right-click on all the textbooks. So a part of me is kind of like, yes, please do this and lead to the destruction of your own business, because that I would be down for. But yeah, I 100%
on.
With you, Georgia. Like, they're greedy. The textbook market, both used and new, is completely predatory on so many levels. Yes.
You know, if what they did then is said, well, because we're going to recoup some of the money from used book sales, we will lower the cost of textbooks. Okay,
right.
Maybe. But the textbooks are $100, $200 because, you know, oh, it costs us so much to create, so we have to charge you this money. But
And then if there are too many of them in circulation, they will issue a very small update that then becomes a new edition that then your professors require you to get.
Yeah, because they've always hated this resale market. They've always hated
it. They have. Oh, I was going to say, so they do everything they can to suppress the used market. And to be clear, the universities, like the official bookstores and even like the unofficial ones, like they're predatory as all get out too in the way that they handle used bookstore sales, where they'll give you $20 for a book that they then sell for $85, right? Like the whole system is a scam. But you're exactly right. Like they do everything they can to get away from the used book market, and they can't partake in those sales because of the first sale doctrine. So they're like, yes, we'll just find a way to avoid that here and then to make updates, you know, incrementally. Yeah, like I said, the only good thing about this would be that they would have terrible DRM. We know it would be cracked, and then we could, you know, like right click and share with everyone.
That's the unintended consequence
of this. That's the only thing.
When you start to lock staff down like this, professors start Xeroxing textbooks. People start to crack the DRM. DRM drives me crazy because it never stops pirates, ever.
No.
Pirates
no.
just go right around it. It stops normal users. It's just sad.
It's those that are rule-abiding.
Rule-abiding, lawful users. Is that who you want to punish?
I don't think they care.
They don't care. They don't care.
They care. No. They're fine. I think they're sleeping fine on their, you know, whatever, $1,000 pillows. They're fine.
You know, I've slept on money. It's not comfortable. Don't do that.
Outed yourself, Leo.
Oh, I used to take a bath in it. That's even worse. So, yeah. I did fill my swimming pool with $1,000 bills, so that's okay. DuckDuckGo has finally changed their tune. You may remember they got in a lot of trouble because they claimed their deal with Microsoft for the Bing search engine required their privacy browser to allow Microsoft trackers through. After an uproar, DuckDuckGo now says their privacy protection will apply to Microsoft scripts as well. Except it's not quite 100%. The VP of communications for DuckDuckGo told The Verge that most Microsoft scripts were already being blocked by the browser's other protections. Camille Bazbaz said, "We ran a test to see how much more blocking is happening as a result of this update. Based on the top 1,000 websites, the increase was only 0.25%. But it won't block scripts for bat.bing.com, which is a script used on advertiser sites to measure effectiveness. So I think that, some permanent reputation damage because DuckDuckGo kind of didn't mention this exemption for Microsoft scripts.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that if you're going on a platform of we should be able to be trusted, and then you get found out that you're not trustworthy, it becomes a really huge issue. Versus if you're just like, we're evil, everyone expects it, and then you don't have to worry about anything.
Has anybody done that? Oh, Facebook. They just embrace the evil.
Google got rid of don't be evil.
They don't even say it anymore.
Mm-hmm. They, you know, like, Abrar, what are your thoughts on
evil Google?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think you really got it down in the sense that, you know, and we started off this conversation talking about how people feel like, you know, they're everywhere they look, whatever platform or product they use, there's no sense of privacy. But I think, you know, people feel like there's very few platforms or services where they do have a little bit more of a sense of privacy. And now it's they have this humbling reminder that maybe that's not the case.
All right. So the Galaxy Unpacked event is August 10th, 3 days. Is that Wednesdays? 8, 9, 10.
It is Wednesday, yes.
And it's early in the morning for us, isn't it, Abrar?
It's too early in the morning.
Yeah, it's like 7 a.m. or something. I'm making 6 a.m.? Oh, man, Pacific.
Yeah.
I'm making Jason Howell, and I think Ron's going to join him. I'm making the All About Android team do this. What are we going to see, Abrar? Do we know?
We're not sure what we're going to see. I think, you know, a lot of us are hoping that we'll see updates to the foldable phones. So we have the Galaxy Z Fold and the Galaxy Z Flip. And foldable phones are interesting because, you know, I think a lot of people see them as kind of like snazzy and fun to look at, but they haven't, you know, the foldable market is growing, but it hasn't, you know, you don't walk around and see people open up a Fold very often.
I don't use it, but I liked the Flip.
Yeah, and the Flip is actually it's actually the more popular one, I think, because it's nice and small, and I think people love that clamshell kind of style, and you can fit in your pocket really easily. The thing about the Fold is that it looks beautiful when you open it. It's like a nice big tablet, but then when it's closed, the screen is really thin and awkward.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that Samsung has to figure out, and that's something that we're hoping, if there is, you know, the next iteration of it, that we kind of figure out a better use case for that. But the Flip is really popular, and it's really cute and snazzy. But, you know, the thing with these phones also is that if they want people to, you know, buy into them more, they're going to have to get the basics down. Like, okay, cool, we have a foldable phone, foldable screen, that's really cool, but battery life isn't great. The cameras are okay, but they're not great. There's design issues. And so I think, you know, once they really get that down, maybe we'll see more people kind of out in the wild with foldable and flippable phones.
One rumor that I kind of believe is that Samsung will drop the Z, because the Russians use that as their symbol for the Ukrainian invasion. And so it's not cool to be a Z anymore. So it might just be the Flip 4. I don't know why you had a Z anyway. It might be just the Flip and Fold 4.
They throw so many numbers and letters into phones.
It doesn't make any sense at all. I really liked it. I gave my Flip to Stacey Higginbotham on Twig because, you know, I'm going to be always probably an iPhone and Pixel phone user just because that's, you know, that's kind of the mainstream stuff. But I really think that was cute. It was little. You could slip it in your pocket or your purse, and it opened up to a normal-sized phone. It wasn't a giant-sized phone like the Fold. It was just a normal little thing, and I don't know. Yeah. I kind of like it. We've seen some leaks, different colors and so forth, but we'll find out a little more on Wednesday. We do know, I'm pretty sure, that Samsung will announce the Watch 5, the Galaxy Watch 5. Again, I think, you know, I'm an Apple Watch wearer, but I think there's a pretty good competitor for it.
Absolutely. I think I always get really annoyed when people, you know, when we talk about any non-Apple company and people see that I have an Android and they're like, oh, you have an Android. It's like, you don't understand that. Samsung, you know, not all Androids are created equal. Samsung does a really good job with its products. And but yeah, definitely good Apple competitors, but it's not the Apple name. So,
yeah,
you know.
I like it. And I like the bezel that this turns. I'm glad they brought that back. There is a rumor that the new one will have big battery life. I don't know. We'll have to see. You know, you hear these rumors, but they're saying the battery is 590 milliamp hours, which would give it a runtime of up to 80 hours. It'd be about a 5 or 6 day watch, which would be pretty impressive.
That's the other big thing that I think watches in general. Once you have a longer battery life, you know, people might be more likely to,
right,
to wear them and keep them on. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just used to just every night just taking everything out of my pockets and hooking it all up to the charger. I got to charge the stuff anyway, so might as well charge it all.
I'm impressed when people can sleep with anything on their arm.
It would bother me so much.
Some people actually do the sleep tracking and
Yeah. All right. Well, Wednesday's the day, 6 a.m. Are you guys going to be, I presume you guys will have live coverage of it as well. Yeah, we'll give you
a plug. We will have live coverage, yes. My fearless colleague, Claire Riley, will be spearheading that, and I will be on as well with her.
Good.
Wish us luck for waking up that
6
early.
6 a.m.
We'll not be sleeping very much, yes. But yeah, we'll have coverage, and then we'll have, you know, post coverage as well.
Good. As I said, we're getting into the expensive season, because not only this is going to start with Samsung, and then presumably at some point Google will announce its Pixel 7 and the Pixel. I'm actually very interested in the Pixel Watch. Google hasn't made a watch in a long time ever. So this would be the first.
No, I think they did. Didn't they? Wasn't there like early on before it was Android Wear? I'm almost positive Google.
Oh, they had a watch, but it wasn't Wear.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm seeming to remember some pretty awful Google Watch that I had to wear for review purposes. So
I must have blocked it out. Now that they own Fitbit, presumably the Pixel Watch will have some interesting health. I mean, Google has the capability. It feels like they've given up, but they have the capability to do some amazing stuff. They just don't seem to have their mojo intact. I don't know why.
I feel like they also do like six different things at the same time.
Maybe
it's like, here,
it.
Let's release five different chat platforms, decide which one we want to keep.
Yeah.
And then like, I don't know. That's just kind of like Google style.
Don't know. Well, look what they did with Duo and Meet and Duo and Meet. And God, what a mess.
Yeah.
Probably roughly a month, we're going to see Apple's new stuff. Rumors are now there'll be a new HomePod, some new HomeKit stuff. Of course, there will be a new iPhone and presumably a new watch. And there are rumors that there will be a pro version of the watch. It'll be made of unobtainium and it'll last for 1,000 hours. And I don't know what. Turn your wrist green. I don't know. We shall see. We shall see. This is an exciting, exciting time. If you've been all excited about dating in the metaverse, I'm bad news for you. Tinder has given up its plans for dating in the metaverse. The HyperConnect unit, which Tinder acquired, the Match Group, which owns Tinder, acquired in 2021, has been asked to scale back its metaverse dating plans. Chief Bernard Kim said, uncertainty about success with virtual worlds required the team not invest heavily in the metaverse, unlike Mark Zuckerberg. The Match Group further blamed the HyperConnect purchase for a $10 million operating loss. So there. They're also stepping back on their plans to add cryptocurrency to Tinder. Tinder coins. Didn't really take off. Nothing more to say, I guess.
Well, didn't Tinder? I mean, like, don't they have a new CEO now too?
They do.
They just fired their CEO.
Yeah, they fired the CEO. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like the old CEO maybe had a bunch of bad decisions. Go big on crypto. Go big on the metaverse. And meanwhile, everybody's like, no, actually, that's not why we use these apps.
We just want to swipe right, please. Just
exactly.
Make it, yeah.
We just want to be DTF, so like let's not mess with any
Thank you for
other
telling
stuff.
The truth. And, but honestly, really, how could you lose money on that? I mean, that seems like a pretty good business.
Honestly, well, no, which is why, like it's been, you know, Match Group like spun out from IAC because they're like, this makes us so much money. Yeah, exactly. It's like it takes a lot for you to like find a way
screw
to
it up.
Lose money
on
this market. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good job.
Sometimes you just go too far. Like Tinder trying to make it rain with their coins. I'm sorry, Tinder. Yeah. Stop making it rain.
Right.
Leave us totally. The way we are.
Don't need Tinder coin.
No.
Yeah.
Who would
I'm
spend
also just trying to envision. Sorry, people being in the metaverse.
Yeah, someone like, giving you a coin. Like, I'm sorry, that would be like, are now should I be offended? Insulted?
I have 100 Tinder coin. Yeah, no. And yeah, metaverse dating. Abra, are you ready for that? Ooh, that sounds great. Can't wait.
Oh my god. As if, you know, how can we make this worse? I think
yes.
that's probably
how
what
can
their
we
motto
make
was.
Worse?
They got in a meeting.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's
we did speed dating. What can we do this even worse?
Exactly.
Metaverse dating.
Plus, are you in your avatar? Like, you know, are we all?
Well, I was gonna say
I'm a car. You're a panda. We're all like, I don't understand.
Well, it's great for furries, but the rest of us, you know.
Right. I was gonna say anybody else? Like, we're already like worried enough about catfishing and like you know other stuff with people, you know, using like fake things. And it's like now you literally can just. Pretend to be anyone.
You can actually be a catfish.
You can be a catfish.
You actually could be a catfish.
Yes.
Which
it's the we call it the double catfish. It's really a sophisticated maneuver.
Yeah, it cancels each other out.
Yeah,
actually.
That's right. It's a double. I'm doing the double catfish.
Yeah,
Christine, I know you're a big fan of TV and movies, a la Film Girl. You talk about it on Rocket. I have to say, I'm a little sad to hear that HBO is going to go away, merge with Discovery Plus next summer.
Yeah. So there was a lot of uncertainty around what was going to happen with that. There was a rumor that basically they were going to get rid of the whole thing. Now it seems like, based on the earnings call, that I listened to and was a very interesting earnings call, I have to say, first one. Under Warner Brothers Discovery, David Zaslav and some of the other execs gave things. There's going to be a new service. They don't know the name of it yet, but it's going to basically combine everything that's in HBO Max and everything that's in Discovery Plus. But they admitted, and I appreciated this, that like both apps kind of suck. And they have to
So
to
let's
fix
make
things.
One app that sucks twice as well.
Well, I mean, I think that this is actually, and this is where I'm a complete nerd on a level that some of the audience will appreciate. I started thinking about like the technological, like the requirements of how you would actually design an app like this that's combining the things from the different services and what like, you know, like how you would do this as a greenfield app to kind of build a new streaming thing with all these disparate, service points. That actually was kind of exciting to me. But yeah, in theory, maybe they'll actually get it right and they'll have like a strong, you know, technical back end so that when you watch Euphoria, the app doesn't crash. But that remains to be determined, but they are making some changes in terms of what types of content different brands will have. And it seems like, you know, the reality TV stuff is all going to be under Discovery and building off of that. And they're not going to be doing the day and date streaming of films, both in theaters and online anymore, which they already said
that was very controversial, both with creators and theater owners. We liked it, right?
We liked it, but it didn't work. And I think that at this point, it's probably not wrong to say if you're going to do theatrical, you need to be pure theatrical. If you have shorter windows, you know, if you have 45 days or whatever, that's better. And I think that gets you to a service faster. And I think for a lot of people, that's a good compromise versus like what the old window used to be. But, you know... The reality is for, and I think this is for worse, but the only films that really succeed in the theater are these big, like tentpole films.
Right.
And so smaller films could go directly to streaming and that's okay. But you do, then you have the circumstance which got the most controversy, which is, you know, Batgirl, which was done with principal photography. It was in the editing stages. It had already been screened in front of test audiences and it's canceled. It's not going anywhere. They are refusing to invest even one more cent in it.
They spent $90 million on it.
Yeah.
You think it was because it was a terrible movie, or do you think they decided that they couldn't make money on it, that spending another $100 million to market it would be...
I think it's probably both.
Yeah.
I think it, so, I mean, there was some good kind of intel that was coming in that, you know, there were tax reasons to do this. They have until the middle of August to get certain tax write-offs based on the previous owners of Warner Brothers.
So they take a $90 million loss. So,
exactly. Which would be good for their tax purposes. I do have to say though, I think if they thought there was a way where they could invest in another 10 or 20 million to finish the film and sell it to foreign markets, where you know you could still sell it and then release it directly to HBO Max even without any you know publicity, and they could make some of their principal back, I think they would have done that. But it seems like, and I'd heard from a couple of people who had heard internally things that, you know, that it was just hot garbage, that it was just an absolutely irredeemable film. And so at that point, if you're talking about extensive reshoots, which is different than just finishing the edit and adding the special effects, at a certain point, you are at a sunk cost fallacy, right? You're throwing good money after bad. And maybe, yeah. Maybe the best decision is to just say, okay, you know what? Another administration, so to speak, made these decisions. We didn't agree to it. We wouldn't have greenlit this film. It's not testing well. We're not going to put it out because it is bad financially, but also probably because it's not a good film.
It's not unprecedented. I mean, this is, right? I mean, this happens. I would imagine this happens a lot.
No, this is fairly unprecedented for a film to actually be done with principal photography and
almost fully edited.
Stage, and yeah. Exactly. For it to be at this stage and then for them to shelve it and for it to be a $100 million film, that is fairly unprecedented. But I can't think of another time.
It's also usually in an era where films. Marketing is a huge, I mean, it's going to be more than $90 million. So
right.
Once it gets to that level, then you really have to say, is it worth spending money to market a film that's going to tank?
Right. I mean, to me, my kind of thing, and this is why my initial thought was this must really not be a good film, was, again, if it was just about trying to recoup some of the money, which, again, this is before I found out about the tax element, which complicates things. I was thinking, okay, well, again, like if all you had to do was finish the edit, not getting reshoots into it, you could sell it into certain foreign territories where that licensing money would
true.
Bring back a lot of it. And then you could just release it straight to streaming
is not
without
bad.
Any publicity, right? Yeah. You could do that. The thing is, though, if it's going to require, say, even like a $40 or $50 million commitment, at that point, I think that completely changes the financial calculus. And so, especially if they're getting the tax write-off, I mean, it's unfortunate to see, you know, a film that, you know, was led by like an Afro-Latina, like, you know, it's bad optically for them to get rid of the film. But I haven't heard anybody coming out of the woodwork being like, no, this was actually a really great script and a really great movie. Like, no one's saying that. The best everybody's saying is, oh, no, it's not as bad as you thought. Like,
that's pretty bad.
Which is kind of damning with faint praise, right? Yeah. Like, you know, so I don't know, but it is fairly unprecedented, which is why I think a lot of us were shocked, because usually, like, you see it with television pilots, you might see, you know, films going, you know, shelved or go direct to DVD, but usually not $100 million films that are part of the big franchise.
They did also cancel Scoob Holiday Haunt, which
that makes total sense, right? That's the sort of thing happens all the time, but
that was
but,
not, wait a minute, it was 95% finished. I know I'm not the audience for it, but the creator said the audiences liked it, and this is kind of a no-brainer for making money because of it's the time of year that it would appear, which is after Halloween, before Christmas. All right, who knows? You know, it's not my business. It's their business. They get to do whatever they want. I wonder if the merging of Discovery Plus and HBO Max is an acknowledgement that there are too many streaming services. The people are tired of spending so much money on separate services.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of been David Zaslav's whole thing. Like, this was actually one of the reasons why, you know, he shut down CNN Plus basically as soon as the company took over. Like, they killed it. Because they basically, he'd said, like, very publicly that he thought that having all these individual streamers and these individual services was a problem, and that you should just have these big omni services. Because Discovery had tried, and he's, like, been public about this, like, they'd tried to have many different sub streaming networks for a long time, and it wasn't successful. And then they were like, okay, we're just going to do Discovery Plus.
What's Discovery Plus? I don't know. What's on Discovery Plus?
So it's basically everything from the various Discovery channels. So like, but that includes TLC and some of the other stuff. So you see some originals.
It's all the Housewives shows.
No. That's on Peacock.
That's Peacock.
It more be like the 90 Day Fiancé universe is who Discovery Plus has. Okay.
Very important to make a distinction.
Very important. Well, yeah, no, because Bravo's a step up. No, I want to be very clear here. Bravo's a step up, right? Like Bravo, spends way more money on reality, 100%. Discovery is like low on the totem pole, right? But they also have like the Chip and Joanna Gaines stuff and like a lot of the
the slide things that David Zaslav showed explaining why these are unique and complementary properties. HBO Max, he said, has a male skew. It's scripted, sure, Game of Thrones. It's lean in, it's appointment viewing. It's the home of fandoms. Yeah, I think that's true. Discovery Plus, female skew, unscripted, lean back, comfort viewing, the home of genredoms. Does that seem fair? It seems to me if these are so antithetical, you don't want to combine them into one service.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm probably the rare person who enjoys the absolute trash. And let's be very clear, it is absolute trash.
You are not
the 90
rare.
Day Fiancé universe.
I'm with you.
And the Prestige TV. I love them both. So I'm actually excited to not have to pay for them both, to be honest with you.
No, I'm with you, Tristina. I'll take all the trashy shows. I just want my brain to melt. If I'm watching something, I don't want to have to think or analyze.
Right.
I just want my brain to melt. I want
And that is honestly what Discovery is great for. And they've made a ridiculous amount of money off of the worst stuff imaginable over the years. And whereas HBO was highbrow. So I don't know if this works or not, but I mean, certainly if you have them in different tabs and if you're not advertised, like if you're not promoting, and I'm sure that they would not want to do this because their algo would be smarter than that. As long as you're not recommending, certain content to the people who only want, Game of Thrones or Sopranos reruns, it probably does make sense, at least for families who have people with different tastes watching something. I don't know.
I mean, it sounds like you're replacing one brain fry for another. You would rather watch 90 Day Fiancé, get your brain mushed that way than trying to figure out what streaming service it's on.
There's just way too many. Like we can only, like people, especially now, they, when we're dealing with what are we going to be buying, where are we going to be spending money, and we don't have as much, you just can't buy all of them. And because they're all splintered off,
exactly.
People are choosing to buy something for a month, binge it, record it, and they're done, and
subscribed.
Then go to the next one.
It keeps
the worst of cable.
Yeah.
We've taken the worst aspects of cable and made it part of the streaming dichotomy.
If I'm sitting down on a Sunday night to watch Game of Thrones and I get 90 Day Fiancé,
What if you can do both?
Right.
You can watch Game of Thrones and then you can watch 90 Day Fiancé as well.
Right. You can enjoy Love After Lockup and Euphoria.
I think there's a lot of couples that are going to be causing some real friction in many households where, she wants to watch 90 Day Fiancé, I want to watch Game of Thrones, and they're both, I mean, this is not, or do you think, we'll both agree, we should definitely buy HBO Disco Max. It's very confusing. I don't know. We'll see. This is an interesting, look, he's trying stuff. I'm not David Zaslav fan, I've got to say.
He's smart. I mean,
and he's greedy.
He is cynical. Here's the interesting thing, though. I've never seen this before. I've never seen someone, a company came in who, bought, obviously, like Warner Brothers from Turner, all that part from, Warner Media, to basically then go around and undo every major decision that the previous owners made.
Oh, he
made.
Did,
like,
too.
Instantly. Like, this entire thing has been, nothing but a referendum on John Stankey, who's CEO of AT&T, and Jason Kilar, who he put in charge of Warner Media. Like literally every decision that they've made from the name HBO Max, which look, I think it's a great service. It's my favorite service. I think we can all agree the name is terrible. To the day and date theater thing, to CNN Plus, to all these other kinds of decisions.
But HBO Max was already diluted. Like it took HBO.
Right, I agree.
Which was very clear. And then they added a bunch of stuff that isn't HBO.
Exactly.
And now they're, look what they say, the top franchises are. This is another Zaslav slide. HBO, Discovery, CNN, HGTV, CN, and DC, Looney Tunes. What are the franchises? You got Batman. You got, what's that, wrestling or Wonder Woman?
Okay. Wonder Woman.
I confuse this with the WWE logo, Superman. Then there's Shark Week. Then there's Game of Thrones. Yep. Then there's 90 Day Fiancé Universe. Then yep. there's Harry Potter.
I like all of this.
Okay.
Same. I was going to say, I'm into all of it.
I'm all in. Abrar, what about you?
Okay, well, I think the only thing, I've never heard someone say, hey, do you have a Discovery Plus account so I can use your password?
You're dead on. Like, never. You're dead on. Absolutely.
Point. Yeah.
Absolutely. I only have it because it's free. I only have it because I get it for free with my Verizon account, to be honest.
Yeah. And that's the only way I've almost been tempted to get it is because I also have it free through a Verizon account. But yeah, it's like, you know, HBO Max is one of those platforms where it's like, oh, I got somebody's password. I'm all set.
Right.
Because as we discussed, there are too many streaming platforms. And mm-hmm. so everyone's just borrowing passwords, which is why Netflix is now trying to crack down on that and make people pay if they share their passwords. But yeah, I think this is a good way to force people to watch the shows that are on Discovery Plus because it's like right there.
I deeply regret getting Peacock because then we discovered the Below Deck reality TV show franchise. I was going to say
again, like this is higher quality. The Below Deck, which is kind of part of the Vanderpump Rules, you know, Roni kind of, you know, whole universe. Yeah, I agree. It's terrible, but it's better than the quality of
now
the Discovery stuff, which
Lisa's
to be clear, I
saying,
love.
Well, we used to get two Below Decks a week. There was Below Deck Down Under and Below yep. Deck Med, and now we only get one Below Deck a week. She was upset that there isn't more Below Deck, but good news, there's like going to be two more Below Decks.
Oh, yeah.
The whole premise of this, if you're smart and you have never heard of this thing, is it is kind of the upstairs, downstairs for the giant mega yacht set. So you're following these poor people who live in these little tiny cabins, and they're right on top of each other as they serve the most entitled, awful people in the world above decks on these super yachts. And mm-hmm. And then the drama that ensues, and what's hysterical is it's a reality show where the camera people, the producers, they're all on the yacht. They're all cheek by jowl. Everybody's jammed in together, and they can't get off. It's actually a great idea for a show.
That's awesome.
I know.
It's honestly very watchable. I enjoy the whole Bravo universe.
I'm so embarrassed.
Cohen,
we have
very,
watched.
Very smart.
It started. I was looking for something because we couldn't travel in pandemic, and I thought, oh, good, we'll get to see, you know, beautiful sunsets in the Caribbean or whatever. And we have now watched literally every single Below Deck show. We went all the way back, all the way forward. We've hundreds of hours.
I love it.
Lost to that franchise.
Lost, though? I think it's worth it. It seems like you
I shouldn't
time
feel
well
guilty.
Invested.
You're saying no. I shouldn't feel guilty?
That's the base the way bless you summarized it.
Bless
yeah,
you.
That sounds mm-hmm.
yeah.
great.
I made it sound better than it is.
It's decompression, right? You need to have some stuff, especially when you're with public, you have to always be
yep.
on camera, dealing with people. It's really nice to just have something where you don't have to deal with it, and you can just enjoy it like candy. It's like brain candy.
Exactly.
You guys are great.
And it's just on in the background. Aww. I mean, I will say, he's right. It is lean back stuff because you're not paying attention.
No.
If you miss
no,
something,
I got my
matter.
Phone open. I got my iPad
exactly.
open. I got my laptop. I'm
it's
playing
very relaxing.
Wordle. Yeah, right.
Because sometimes, you know, the shows, as much as we're like on TV and it's great, you have to pay so much attention to every little thing.
It's true.
That it's true. It's like a chore. It is not a chore to watch Below Deck. Like,
no,
you know?
It's not a chore. Sandy Yawn, Captain Sandy, is coming to Santa Rosa in a couple of months. And Lisa says, we're getting tickets, right? I say, to see Love the it. Yacht captain, what is she going to talk about? Swabbing the poop deck. I don't know, but we're going to go see her, I guess.
That'd be a great trip. You have to be like stuck in the show. You are now below deck. They like you
yeah.
pay all this money.
You're
they
stuck.
Make all this
they
money.
Won't let you
you're
out.
Stuck there. You're
oh
trapped.
My god! Isn't that the Star Wars experience?
Yeah,
like
you're
the
hotel.
Is
you can't
the
leave.
Hotel. Like
yeah.
where you spend all that money for the yeah. terrible hotel room, and then you're part of the cosplay thing. That's basically what they've done. Bravo, because there's a Bravo Con. They should totally do that. They could auction off on a Below Deck
yeah.
experience, and they could make so much money. I'm not even joking.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't pay for it because I like my space too much. But I would. There would be so many people who would pay for a Below Deck experience.
The best part is, you know, you're always trying to figure out, well, who of the crew is going to hook up, because that's
right.
like the whole show.
That's the whole point of the show. Yeah,
the whole point of the show. Who's going to hook up? And they never do because there's cameras everywhere. There's nowhere private at all. But then the guests on these shows, are the worst people. They've actually gotten a little better. I think they must have gotten some notes from people saying, don't make them so horrible or something. Or maybe they've watched the show and they now know they're going to be, it's going to be permanent record. But they're nicer than they used to be. They used to be. Like they had the woman who was the Queen of Versailles, you know, that documentary about the woman who married the 800-year-old timeshare magnate. And she had a little dog's poop all over the house because she couldn't be bothered to take him out for a walk. She gets on the yacht. That's fun. That's fun. All right. Anyway, okay. I got to get going because there's a show tonight. I don't want to miss it. So here we go. Beautiful picture. God, you got to love the James Webb Telescope. This picture of the Proxima Centauri. Beautiful picture of a galaxy. No, it's not, actually. It's a piece of sausage. Etienne Klein, who, by the way, you might trust, he's the research director at France's Alternative Energies and Atomic Energy Commission, tweeted this photo last week saying it is the closest star to the sun. Look at it. It's beautiful from the James Webb Space Telescope. lots of people tweeted it, retweeted it, liked it. The level of detail, he wrote, a new world is revealed day after day. He had to admit a few days later, it's not, in fact, the work of the world's most powerful space telescope. It is a slice of chorizo sausage. And then apologizes, saying, according to contemporary cosmology, no object belonging to Spanish charcuterie exists anywhere but on Earth. Lots of people pissed off at Etienne for trolling the world with a piece of Spanish sausage.
It's so telling.
I love it.
It does kind of look like it could have been from the...
I really is.
Actually believe it when I first saw it.
I fooled you, didn't I?
Yeah. I was like, oh, and then, yeah.
No.
Same. Same. And then you look at it more closely and you're like, oh, no, that's pepperoni.
What I love too is like... This is just hilarious because I don't know if you guys have noticed that on TikTok, a lot of people have been like, okay, you're showing me all these pictures. I don't fully understand. Like, am I supposed to be excited? It's like super colorful, super. I think you have one side, you have like the people who are really into science who are like, this is amazing. And then you have the other side that's like, okay, what now? And then you have this.
And then, and then there's sausage. Into it. Yeah.
We're like, oh, I guess I'm supposed to be excited about this. And then, yeah. So.
I love it.
Amongst people, the academics of us down a little bit to be like, oh, okay, like just, you know, hold off on your high horse. Even you got fooled by the, you know, it's tastier than it is really scientific. So
this is one galaxy that will taste great with your scrambled eggs. Thank you so much, Abrar. I hope you will come back. Abrar Al-Hidi, wonderful to have you. Your first time on Twit. Was it okay?
It was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Good. I'm glad you were here. Video host, producer at CNET. She'll be up early on Wednesday morning covering Samsung's Galaxy Unplugged event. Thank you so much.
I look forward to it.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And you know what? You were so good, I forgot about the bent blind. So.
Oh, good. See?
Yeah,
okay,
see,
good.
My
That's
OCD,
a huge compliment.
Yeah. I just didn't even notice after a while.
I'll carry that in my heart. Thank
you. Always a pleasure to have you on. Christina Warren, congratulations on 4 months now at GitHub, senior dev advocate. Someday soon she'll get the right pump back. Mm-hmm. Film girl on Twitter. What's the most valuable shoe in that rack behind you? Some of those kicks are worth hundreds, yes?
Some of them are, yeah.
Are you out of that now? Is that another project you moved on from?
Yeah, I've kind of moved on from that a little bit. I'm not as into it. There's a pair of off-whites that are not on the rack, but they're in a box that's up there that are the most valuable.
Sealed in a box.
No, I mean, I they're just still in the box. They just aren't on display. I wear shoes. I don't do that whole thing. But I have a pair of off-whites that were probably $600. That's not the most I've spent on shoes, but that's probably the most expensive on
the difference
rack
is me. These are not Manolos. These are comfortable.
No.
You can wear them.
Right.
You can enjoy them.
It's street style. I mean, there's other stuff with it too. But
yeah,
totally.
I love it. Thank you, Christina. So good to see you. Thank you, Georgia Dow. As always, Georgia gives out her email address for anybody who's struggling during these difficult times, georgia@westmounttherapy.com. Thank you for doing that, Georgia. I appreciate it. And if you have not watched therapist reacts and the other videos she does at youtube.com/GeorgiaDow, you are missing. This adds, in fact, you need to do a below deck therapist reacts. This adds to the enjoyment of trash TV. Because
I did the Will Smith Apollo. That was the first real person.
Oh, wow.
Thing. I did do that one.
Oh, wow.
It's the first time I've done that. It actually did really well in comparison to the toxic masculinity. Did really well, the toxic masculinity. But I thought you can go take a look at the comments for your entertainment value.
I am very curious what you have to say about Will Smith's faux apology to Chris Rock for slapping him.
I had a few thoughts about it. I had a few thoughts about it, and I enjoyed doing it. So I might do reality TV, but I like doing the character stuff. And I don't know. I'm gonna take a look and see where it's at. But Onora's coming up. Toxic Masculinity from Soldier Boy was the last one, and you can just check out the comments.
Your comments are always great. Like this one on the Will Smith apology. Guy has an Oscar and can't even act like he's sorry. I love that. as you know, you've done something I thought no one could do. You've actually made YouTube comments good. So everybody, Georgia Dow is at youtube.com/GEORGIADOW. So great to have you. Thanks once again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. That's 2100 UTC. That's when we kind of start assembling. The show usually begins by 1:30. You can watch the pre-show and the conversations and the chit-chat and the show itself live during our live stream, live.twit.tv. There's audio and video there. If you're watching live, join the chat room. They're there 24/7, but it's most active while we're live during shows, and I'm watching, and we always get great interaction from our IRC. It's irc.twit.tv. TV. We also have a Discord chat, which is always a lot of fun. These are members of Club Twit. And the animated GIFs just keep on coming. If you are not yet a member of Club Twit, $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of all of our shows. It gets you the access to the Discord, which is more than just conversations about the shows. There's every geek topic under the sun, including our book club this week, this month. Stacy's book club will be Clara and the Sun. We're going to do that August 25th. We're about a week away from Alex Lindsay's Ask Me Anything. That'll be on the 18th. So we've got club events. We have shows that actually do not get released outside the club. Our new Hands on Windows show with Paul Thurrott is an example. There's the Untitled Linux show. There's the Giz Fizz, the book club, and then shows often, when they're successful, it's kind of an incubator because the club members are paying to support the shows. We don't have to worry about audience size and advertisers. But then when a show takes off, like This Week in Space does, we can release it to the public. So that's one of the best benefits of Club Twit. All the shows also can be bought individually, by the way, at $2.99 a month. But I think the $7 a month is worth it. You also get the Twit Plus feed, which includes stuff that didn't make it to the podcasts. If you're interested in joining, please, we appreciate it. It really helps us out. All you have to do is go to twit.tv/clubtwit. $7 a month. There's a yearly. There's also corporate membership. After the fact, this show and all the shows that we release publicly are available on our website at twit.tv. Each show has its own YouTube channel as well, just like Georgia Dow, just without any audience. We also, without the viewership and the comments, we also have, of course, a podcast feed because they are podcasts and you can get your podcast player and subscribe. In fact, that's the best way to get to it. If you subscribe to it, we guarantee you'll have it by your Monday morning commute. Thanks for being here, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.
Amazing.
Bye-bye.